జయం విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిభ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర శత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ అభయచరణారవింద భక్తివేదాంత గోస్వామి మహారాజ్ శీల ప్రభుపాదికి జయం. నిత్యలీలా ప్రవిష్ట విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిభ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తర శత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహారాజ్ శీల ప్రభుపాదికి అనందకోటి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శీల హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్ కి ప్రేమ సహో శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌరవభక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోపగోపినాథ శ్యామగుండ రాధాగుండ గీ గోవర్ధనకి బృందావన్ ధామ్కి మాయపూర్ ధామ్కి మధురపురి ధామ్కి జగన్నాథపురి ధామ్కి ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్కి గంగమాయికి యమునమాయికి తులసిదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌర్ ప్రేమానంది. ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ గురు అండ్ శ్రీ గౌరంగ, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శీల ప్రభుపాద్. నమో విష్ణుప్రదాయ కృష్ణప్రస్థాయ భూదలే శ్రీమదే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామిన్ ఇది నామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతీదేవే గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశదారిణే. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం పార్థాయ ప్రతిబోధిదాం భగవదాం నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రథితాం పురాణమునినాం మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృతవర్షిణీ భగవతి అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినీ అంబత్వా మనసందదామి భగవద్గీతే భవద్వేషిణీ. నమోస్తు వ్యాస విశాలబుద్ధే పుల్లారవిందాయుధపత్రనేత్ర యేన త్వయా భారత తైలపూర్ణ ప్రజ్వాలితో జ్ఞానమయ ప్రదీప ప్రపన్న పారిజాదాయ తోత్రవేత్రైకబాణయ జ్ఞానముద్రాయ కృష్ణాయ గీతామృతదుహే నమః. సర్వౌపనిషదో గావో దుగ్ధా గోపాల నందనా పార్థో వల్ససుదీర్భోక్తా దుగ్ధం గీతామృతం మహద్ వసుదేవ సుదం దేవం కంసచ్చాణూరమర్దనం దేవగీ పరమానందం కృష్ణం వందే జగద్గురుం. భీష్మద్రోణతటా జయద్రత జలా గాంధార నీలోల్పల శల్యగ్రాహవదీ కృపేణ వహనీ కర్ణేన వేలాకుల అశ్వథామా వికర్ణ ఘోరమనరా దుర్యోధనావర్తిని సోత్తీర్ణ ఖలు పాండవైరణ నదీ కైవర్తక కేశవ పారాశర్యవజ సరోజమలం గీతార్థగంధోల్కటం నానాఖ్యానకేసరం హరికథా సంబోధనాబోధితం లోకై సజ్జన షల్పదైరహర పేపీయమానం ముదా భూయాద్ భారత పంగజ కలిమలం ప్రధ్వంసిన శ్రేయసే. మూకం కరోతి వాచాలం పంగుం లంఘయతే గిరిం యల్కృపాతమహం వందే పరమానందమాధవం యం బ్రహ్మా వరుణేంద్ర రుద్రమరుదస్తున్నొంది దివ్యైస్తవైర్వేదై సాంగపదైర్ క్రమౌపనిషదైర్గాయందీయం సామగాః ధ్యానావస్థిత తద్గదేన మనసా పశ్యందీయం యోగినో యస్యాందం న విదుసురా సురగణై దేవాయ తస్మై నమః. సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం గోవింద గోవింద. కృష్ణ ఈజ్ టాకింగ్ అబౌట్ ది త్రీ కైండ్స్ ఆఫ్ శ్రద్ధ, సాత్వికం, రాజసం, తామసం. హీ సెడ్ దట్ ఇన్ ది వర్డ్స్ త్రివిధా భవతి శ్రద్ధ, దేహినాంస స్వభావజ సాత్వికీ రాజసీ చైవ తామసీ చేదిదాం శృణు. సో కృష్ణ సేయింగ్ దట్ ది శ్రద్ధ వేరీస్ అకార్డింగ్ టు ది మోడ్స్ ఆఫ్ నేచర్, అకార్డింగ్ టు ది మోడ్స్ ఆఫ్ నేచర్ అండ్ ఆల్సో మెన్షన్ దట్ శ్రద్ధామయోయం పురుష, దట్ ఎనీ వన్ ఇన్ లైఫ్ యూ లుక్ అట్ దమ్ వాట్ హీఈస్ యాక్చువల్లీ ఈస్ హీస్ శ్రద్ధ. That is the, that's what he is actually. His Shraddha is what person. Person is his Shraddha. So Shraddha is a very important word. And as we saw yesterday, that the, depending on the modes of nature, different living entities exist in different planes. They exist. So normally we are used to seeing things with the eyes. And we accept only that as the truth. We can't see anything else. This is the common man's situation. What they see in this with the naked eyes, they think that's the only truth. Nothing else is the truth. That's the biggest trap. What in Krishna's creation, it's not only what you see through your senses. And they give this example to make us understand that a snake has got not all the five senses what we have got. They have got three senses. And with that they perceive the world in one way. We perceive the world in another way. The plants and the trees, they perceive the world in a different way. So which one is real? This question always comes, which is the real world? So to think like this, that Krishna's creation is such, there is various living entities existing in various planes, various levels of existence, and therefore to think that only I will believe what I see through my eyes is a blunder. If one starts thinking like that, only what I see through my eyes is the truth, that's a big blunder. Because Krishna's creation is so variegated. And when you look at it that way, the rishis are saying to us that yakshas, rakshasas, and prayadas, bhutaganas, they all exist. But their existence is not felt, seen by us through the eye directly, but their presence is felt, how it affects our mind. And that is how you get to know of their existence. Only when you get experience of the prayadam, bhutam, and yakshas, rakshasas and all that, then you start realizing that they also exist. That is why when they affect our mind, we get disturbed. We get disturbed. Like people who have committed suicide, due to that, they may have to live in a state without a gross body. That is prayadam. Without a gross body, they may have to live in this world. So, if you deny that they don't exist because I can't see them, that doesn't mean much. It's not mean anything. So, in the same way, prayadam, bodhaganam, all these things, all different planes of existence is there. So, according to your shraddha, then you will resonate with them and you will be able to experience them also. You will be sensitive to them, in other words. You will become sensitive to their existence of these yakshas and bhutaganas, prayadas and all that, right? So basically what it is Krishna says that if one is in sattvagunam, then he will be mostly in conscious of the devadas, the different kinds of devadas, that he will be more conscious of them, of their presence. And those who are more in the rajogunam, they will be conscious of the presence of yakshas and others because of the money involved, the attachment to the wealth. And and also, rakshamsi, Krishna says rakshamsi, rakshasas. So, according to your rajogunam inside us, right, all these emotions, very powerful emotions, will come inside us, different types of emotions, right? And all those forces accordingly will come in there, in that place. In that place they will be present. And it is difficult to explain that more than that, but it has to be experienced in different situations how people are affected by them. Yakshas, rakshasas, all of them will appear there. And all these things, if you want to know that more, it is in the Karmakandam in the Vedam. That is where all this is coming from. What Krishna has spoken that is referring to the Karmakandam in the Vedam. And there you will notice different kinds of mantram to invoke different devadas. You can invoke them through different mantrams, right? All these yaksha, rakshasas, bhutam and all that mostly comes in the Atharvana Vedam. Atharvana Vedam is the one which is used for abhijara vritti. Abhijara means using these devadas, you create trouble for others. Suppose somebody wants to, especially during the olden days, among the royal families, kings, when they will use these things to destroy their enemies. It was normal practice. So that's why Kshatriyas are more familiar with Atharvana Vedam. they are more in tune with that because they have used to using them. Whereas generally Brahmanas won't go into Atharvana Vedam so much. They will stick to Rig Vedam, Yajur Vedam and Sama Vedam. Yeah. So there are mantram in the Vedam to invoke all these different kinds of devatas, right? And this problem with the devas and asuras, it's already there in the Vedam, the conflict between them, right? So, the reason, because we are not familiar with all that, that is why we are somewhat peaceful in this world, the way we are now. If we get to know them all, and their influence on us, we will get disturbed very much. But because we are not familiar with them, that is why we are somewhat peaceful here. That means this Pretam, Bhutam, Bhutaganam, and what Krishna mentions there, Yakshas, Rakshasas and all that, we are not aware of all of them. We are in ignorance about that. And therefore, we are peacefully sitting here now, right? But why did Krishna say all these things in the Bhagavad Gita then? The reason is that Pretam, all these are subtle bodies. Sushma Shariram they are. They don't have gross bodies, right? And it's not the ghost that they show in the movies and all. Movies they'll show ghosts sometimes. As though it has got a body and it will be covered with a cloth and you can't identify them very well, right? So, what is happening is, after death, when you don't get another gross body, at that time, a jiva has to stay in that state. Jiva has to stay in that state, right? And so, if we get some emotions inside, thinking about them, and a favorable relationship with them, then they will come closer to you. This is the way it happens. Suppose in your inside, your state of mind is such that, or some emotions comes up inside, thinking about them, departed souls who have gone to different, who didn't get a body due to some reason. All this is, a lot of things are unknown in all these things. When a jiva leaves this body, how he moves further after that is a very unknown thing, because only Antaryami knows his past, what he has done. So accordingly a decision is made what he has to go through from then onwards, right? So when you have some favorable emotions towards that Pretam, then they will come closer to you. Yeah, they'll come closer to you. And that is what Krishna is saying here, that tamasa janaha. That's what that word is indicating. Tamasa janaha. Tamasa janaha means, in your mind, suppose there is a lot of tamogunam builds up. In your mind, a lot of tamogunam builds up. And that is favorable for Pretams and such Bhutams to come closer through tamogunam, right? So, and this is the reason, as I said yesterday, that we won't know anything, but sometimes good people go and do wrong things. And you start asking, why did that happen? It happened because of this, right? And you think that they were good people, but they have gone and done something very wrong. And if you ask the question, why did that happen? There is no answer to that, right? Some energy has been used to do those wrong things. We don't know that. So, because yogis and also the people who are advanced in the spiritual path, they are very conscious of all these things and they are very alert about that. Whom they associate with, where they live, where they eat, all things, they become more and more alert in that way. Right, they will try to remain in a sattvic place, and they will only go to places where there is sattvagunam, and they will know that when they go to some places, they'll immediately sense that they become so sensitive, they will decide that this is not a place for them to stay. They will move away from there as quickly as possible. They won't stay there, right? So So therefore Krishna is saying here that while going to sleep, before going to sleep in the night, you should chant the holy name, you should read Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, books like that and go to sleep. Otherwise, in your consciousness, you could build up such emotions. And if you sleep like that, it is more like a samadhi sthiti. Similarly, in all aspects of life, while eating, while bathing, sleeping, all, there is a science behind that, right? And that is what Krishna is going to talk to us now onwards. Why it is important to keep this discipline in sleeping, eating, bathing, and associating with people, living, all these areas of life, one should maintain a certain discipline for this purpose, right? So, just like if you keep looking at the mobile, all the yakshas and rakshasas will come in the night. They'll visit you. Because mobile is full of them. Is it not? Right? So, you're opening up a psychic power within you. It is not the mechanical devices. And this is all the science what Krishna is saying here. Forces what you are not familiar with, if you are able to make contact with them, that itself is a science. With forces whom you are not familiar with, but you are able to make contact with them. And it is what they call in English occultism, occult power, right? And one has to know how to use them, right? Otherwise, these forces will give trouble to us, right? Karmakandam in the Vedam is helpful in this aspect. Karmakandam in the Vedam. There were a lot of personalities who were very familiar with all these things in the past. But that generation has disappeared now, practically. But still there are few people who are very, very powerful how to handle the occult powers. So, here Krishna is trying to tell us that as much as possible in our lifestyle, one should maintain a certain discipline so that you don't get driven by all these kinds of powers. So, if you get to know that if you move into those planes of existence, what impact it is going to create, then what will happen is, if you get to understand that, then particularly when you are doing your sadhana or dhyanam, meditations and all, when you become more sensitive, when your mind becomes very sensitive, Krishna is saying, when your mind becomes more sensitive, you should be extremely alert, and that is what this chapter is going to talk about. How important it is when you doing the sadhana. Of course, these are meant for serious people who are doing sadhana. We made it everything too simple. That's the problem. The difficulty is that we made it too simple. Actually, it is not. When you do sadhana, the progress can be monitored within. How you become more subtle and be more focused, and how one should be careful at that time, because you are becoming more sensitive to that. So, this lifestyle, in all fields of life, there are, accepting that, there are different forces operating here. And they won't be able to disturb you if you are conscious of these things, right? In other words, what Krishna is saying here is that, as much as possible, improve the sattvagunam inside. As much as possible, increase the sattvagunam inside, right? And to the extent you can improve the sattvagunam, to that extent, in the same way, if your sattvagunam increases to a higher level, what will happen is, you will have satsangam with greater personalities also, in not seen through the eyes, but in a subtle consciousness. You will get a connection with them. This is only known to the people who are doing sadhana in a higher level, right? not ordinary people who are living in this world doing their all their other things, but those who have gone far in sadhana level, what they know is this, that if a sattugunam increases in a person, he will have a relationship with the mahalpas. Their salsangam you will get without your knowledge in the dream state and even sometimes in the vacant state. So that means good forces, what influences you in a positive way, their impact will be there, their sangam will be there, and they will give you anandam, shanti, happiness and everything, right? So, unusually, you will experience a samadhi state even, due to their association, right? So this you can verify also in the sense that people who are doing good sadhana, right? They know when they go to certain temples, for example, or they will experience that presence of the deity. Deity's presence, they'll be able to sense it. The deity's presence. And that powerful presence, right? So these are only known to yogis who are very advanced in the meditation, dhyanam process, right? So, not for laugigans, materialist people. Materialist people are not sensitive to these things. Only yogis who have developed a higher sensitivity in relationship with the in Krishna or with the relationship with the deities whom they are worshipping, they have become very sensitive to that. So, ordinary people, they don't need all these things. They don't need all these things, right? So this Shraddha topic, what we are discussing now, it is like a key or to open up higher planes, basically. The Shraddha, what is discussed here, is a key for opening up the higher planes of existence, right? And when he opens up, what happens is that he will be conscious of that spiritual awareness inside, bodham, very much, right? Therefore, for him, it is important what he sees through the eyes, what he hears through the ears, what he smells through the nose, what he eats through the tongue, mouth, and what he touches with the body. All these things, five senses, he'll be very conscious what they are being done with them, right? So, you got to live in this world keeping all these things, keeping a note of all these things, right, to live. And that is why in Kathopanishad says, Uttishtada Jagrada. Remember that? Uttishtada Jagrada. Prapya Avaran Nibhodada. This is what it is referring to. This Uttishtada Jagrada Prapya Avaran Nibhodada in the Kathopanishad is talking about this. That you making progress in spiritual path, you become very alert yourself. Alert yourself, right? So, Uttishtada means that you choose your spiritual life and then afterwards you should be very alert. That is where most of the people become very callous and become very relaxed about it. I've done what I can, now I can't do anything else. You become like that, you see? And then you become a sort of, that's a sort of tamogunam inside. But actually, when we making that progress, if the progress is happening, you will naturally become more alert about that, right? So, the Yudhishthira Maharaj spoken about this in Mahabharatam. He says that, how do you prevent the dirt entering into the mind? He mentions, and that is proper bathing, not external body bathing. Manomala tyagaha. Manomala. Mala means the impurities entering into the mind and keeping the mind free from the impurities. Free from the impurities. And in order for that purpose only, every day you are following the regulative principles. Every day you are doing japam. Every day you are doing all other Ekadashi, Sandhyavandanam. Everything is for this purpose. For Manomala Tyagam. Manomala Tyagam means that not allowing the bhava mandalam or manasa with the impurities, not allowing the impurities to get in. So, these kinds of forces, if it is all done properly, if one has following principles, and one who becoming conscious that you are in spiritual life, and becoming alert, if you become alert, then these kinds of forces cannot affect you anymore. You can observe this with people who are good devotees or good jnanis. They will avoid bad association as much as possible. And if they are put into some situation, they will withdraw from there as quickly as possible, not to pursue further. Right? So, it is not only a physical virus, it's also a psychic virus. Physical virus we are familiar with. We've got plenty of vaccines for that. But these are the vaccine for the psychic virus. It is a psychic virus more dangerous than the physical virus, right? So, and you may not have problem with that, right? And you will be able to remain peaceful in shanti states. And these are all the hints for that. Krishna is giving the hint towards those things, right? And that itself is a big science. This psychic virus of all these different feelings and emotions. How do they come to us? Suddenly you get very excited or emotional. Anger, greed, lust, and all kinds of thoughts comes into us. Why do they come? We have to ask that question, isn't it? Just like when you get COVID and other diseases, you are thinking that, I got infected, you are saying. In the same way, when disease for the mind happens, when the mind gets affected by various kinds of thoughts and emotions, you have to ask the question, why did that happen to me? Why did I get such an emotion, powerful emotion, hate towards someone, or attachment to someone, ragam, dvesham? All these things are symptoms of this, that our spiritual strength is not good enough, to alert enough, to be sensitive to all these things. That's why we come, it happens, comes and it, whatever happens, it happens. And then we bear the consequences of that, whatever has happened, right? So, therefore Krishna is saying here is that, if you are making progress in spiritual life, and when Sattvagunam is building up inside, you will become more conscious of these things. Anything that is happening inside the mind, you will become sensitive to that, right? Another thing Krishna is saying, there will be very few people who are in Sattvagunam in this world. There will be very, very few people, right? So, he says that the majority of the people, it is mentioned here also, that the, sattvani rupam, vishishta samskara, prayada andakaranani rupam, sarvasya prani jadasya, shraddha bhavati bharata. Ayala Swami says like that. Yeah? He is saying that the chances are of Sattvagunam is Vishishta Samskaram. It's a very special Samskaram that is. Which one? The Sattvagunam. And Prayada Andhakaranani Rupam Sarvasya Panijadasya Shraddha Bhavati Bharata. And a lot of that is influencing the Andhakaranam in the subtle body. And therefore, he says, Shraddhamayaha, Shraddha Prayahayam Purushaha, Samsari Jivaha Katham Yo Shraddhaya Ya Shraddha. So, he is saying here that the effect of all this is that ordinary people in this world, most of the people, majority of the people are Rajoguna Tamoguna in the world. Majority of the people are Rajogunam, Tamogunam. Very rarely you will find people in Sattvagunam. And those who have got Sattvagunam and who have got Bhakti and who have got Upasana, all of them together. Right? So, pure Sattvam is very rare. And even if this is an important thing, what Krishna is saying, we discussed the three modes of material nature before, right? How three modes of material nature works in this world, is what Krishna is discussing now. Earlier we talked about three modes of nature, right? So he is saying here that this Rajogunam Tamogunam, even if this Sattogunam is there, it will come and it will stir up the whole thing. Rajogunam Tamogunam will come and it will stir it up. Everything will be stirred up, right? So not outside places, even temples, ashrams, everywhere. Rajogunam Tamogunam will come and it will stir up the whole place. You may not know these things. You are thinking the temple is there, deities are there, everything is going. But how much Rajogunam has come inside, Tamogunam has come inside, you won't be sensitive to that because you are not alert enough. Yeah. And what will happen is that you will observe this in the temples, particularly. Look at the festival times in a temple. You can see the effect of Rajogunam coming in strongly. It becomes like an entertainment. Festival becomes like an entertainment for people. In India, what happens is they will have fireworks. This fireworks is all not in the Shastram anywhere. This is the Rajogunam in us working towards that. We have to have fireworks because we are celebrating Krishna's birthday or something like that. Rajogunam, it is the Rajogunam inside is prompting that to happen here. So that enjoying propensity inside here. If once that comes in, then the whole life is spoiled. Everything is spoiled. The temple atmosphere is spoiled, right? So naturally, this is a perfect science itself. This enjoying propensity in us is there inside everybody. So when a festival comes, immediately you want to take advantage of that. The festival, you will make it like a mela. And you will like a festival. You say, oh, this everything is okay because it's festival. We have to celebrate the festival. That's what I'm saying. That Sattogunam inside goes, and Rajogunam Tamogunam comes in, and it stirs up the whole thing, and the festival becomes like a enjoying mood it creates, right? So you will notice in India particularly you see these things. Many temples, when they have a yearly festival, some people only will interested in the fireworks, as much fireworks as possible, and they will spend a lot of money on that, on the fireworks. Some people who are interested in the drum, playing the drums, they'll only come for that because that's what they like it. And they think festival is for playing drums. And some others, they are interested in the elephants. I'm talking about in temples where they do all these things, right? They are interested in the elephants. How many elephants were there? They will ask. 5 elephants, 7 elephants. And they get so attached to the elephants and they have their own favorite elephants among them. And they will, just like you're betting on the horses, they'll bet on the elephants also in the temple festival. It goes like this. The vasanas from Rajogunam, Tamogunam will come into the temple like this. And it will make the whole mess of everything. And nobody knows what's right and what's wrong. They get confused everything, right? So, unfortunately, lot of temples have gone into people's hands like that. Such people's hands. And that is why Brahminical culture is important. Normally, Brahmanas won't allow such things when they were controlling the temple. When these government took over the temples and they started managing, all this happens. People with Sattogunam, if they are there, they won't allow these things to happen. They will stop it at a certain place, not allow that to enter into the temple. Because of their Sattogunam, they know what is the right thing. But when the government is running the temple, what will happen? Government is also Rajogunam, Tamogunam. So what do you expect from them? Right? So, therefore, it has become difficult to go to those temples now, during festival times and all that, right? So, you can see there is a book called Saints of Rajam. I don't know whether you have seen that book. It is written by Dr. O.B.L. Kapoor, who is godbrother of Prabhupada. He talks about the saints in Vrindavanam who lived there, right? And some of those Mahalmas there, they won't even take prasadam from the temple. They won't take prasadam from the temple. Instead, they will go and beg for bhiksha. They'll take bhiksha and eat that. And why? If you ask them, why do you don't take prasadam from the temple? They're saying that the temple collects the funds from people who have made money in the wrong means And that money has been used to make prasadam in the temple. And they have become so alert towards that, so they say that it will affect their sadhana. And therefore they won't eat prasadam from the temple. OBL Kapoor mentions that. That book you can buy, it is on the internet. You can see 10 or 12 pounds, something like that. Saints of Rajam, it's called. He mentions it there. He was Prabhupada's godbrother, OBL Kapoor. Yeah. So they are saying that what's the problem? Problem is this, it will affect their bhajan. Right? So it will affect their japam, it will affect their dhyanam. I mean, because they have become so sensitive to it. When they start saying that, if they take prasadam from the temple even, it affects their sadhana. So to such an extent, they become sensitive to that. And they say the reason behind that is, the money that has been collected to give prasadam has not come from the right sources. It has come by wrong means, because, you know, big temples, what they are like. Big people, big businessmen, they will give huge amount of donations to give prasadam free to so many people, crores and crores of rupees. And when they give that prasadam and temple is making the prasadam, so you think that everything is pure. It is not. That is what they are saying here, right? So, for a yogi, all these things become very sensitive to them, right? And it is like this, when the rocket leaves this world, how you have to be alert in the same way. He says there, yeah, look at this commentary on this. Evam karyato nirnidaha satvadi nishtaha shastra vidhi ulsarge tatra kashil eva sahasreshu deva pujida talparaha satva nishto bhavadi bahulyenatu rajo nishtaha tamo nishtaha cha eva pranino bhavandi katham. Ajari Swamiji says about that. He says there, according to one's swabhavam, one's nature, Shastram will tell you what kind of nishta, steadiness he may have. And out of many people, thousands and thousands of people, those who are in sattvagunam is only one or two people who are in sattvagunam. And that is a fact. That almost all people are in rajogunam and tamogunam, right? And that is why this rajasa tamasa nishta is more complicated in the sense, right? And that's what Krishna is going to talk about it now on, from the fifth verse onwards, right? So here, the important thing, right? Rajogunam and tamogunam is sufficiently present in the world, right? Whether you talk about bhakti, temple, or ashramam, whatever it may be, in all these places, after some time, when the great personalities who started this, right, when they were present there, there will be sattvagunam. Those who started the institutions, when they were present there, there will be some degree of sattvagunam present at that time. And then, rajogunam will come and influence the sattvagunam. Right? And by second generation itself, or even third generation also, it will be filled with rajogunam. Filled with rajogunam, right? And once you go down like that, second, third, fourth, like that, any spiritual institution, spiritual traditions, will lose it completely. Sattvagunam, they'll completely lose it after that. You cannot measure it by any means. Only if you have a very sensitive understanding of these things, you can observe that. How rajogunam has came in, how sattvagunam has left. You should be able to notice that in institutions. And that is how you can see how sensitive you are to these things. One who is not sensitive, he won't be able to know these things. He will think everything is going on nicely like before. It's getting better, they'll say. But on the other hand, what Krishna is saying here is that the ashramams, temples, all of, it's not only one institution, all institutions, all ashrams, this happens. And all the great personalities are very conscious of this. Madhadhipadis, who are managing the mathams, right? So, then how did these mathams survive this far? What did they do to prevent this happening? How could you stop that happening? Because it is an accepted fact that once the founder who is there, in his time probably it will remain practically in somewhat Sattvagunam. Once he leaves, Rajogunam comes, even the first generation, Rajogunam has come. And then onwards it is only Rajogunam, Tamogunam more and increasing day by day, Sattvagunam decreasing day by day, goes away. And after some time what you find is only Rajogunam and Tamogunam. There is no trace of Sattvagunam anymore. So these are known to all the other great personalities also. All the other acharyas also knew about this problem. How did they solve this problem? They also know that it is difficult to prevent that happening. That is the nature of the prakriti. Prakriti's nature is like that. Sattvagunam will stay for some time and there will be very few people who are in Sattvagunam. After some time, Sattvagunam will go, Rajogunam and Tamogunam will come and take over everything. Everything will take over, right? So, in Vaidika Sampradayam, what they have done was, right, the Mathadipadi or in charge of the matham, he will be looking for some everywhere to find that one person in good Sattvagunam. He will look for that. And in all his traveling journeys everywhere, meeting people and different associations, he is conscious of all the other places where Vedam is taught, Veda Padashala, and places like that. He will be looking for a person who has got maximum Sattvagunam. Maximum Sattvagunam, right? And what he will do is, he will pick him up on the early days itself, that person who has got that Sattvagunam in him, and bring him over and install him in his position as a successor. That's what they have done. This is why this Acharya Parampara system is from guru to that next person like that. They didn't believe in the GBC system. It is fact. It's a fact of life. You can't deny this. In all matham, traditional mathams, this is what they have done. And therefore, what they done was, that is how these paramparas have survived this war. Even Sringeri and Kanji and all of this survived this war because of this only. You will notice them, when they pick the next successor, they are very conscious of that. And they will observe him for years and make sure that he is fully conscious of the traditions of the matham, and that he is very rigid in following all his daily practices, nitya anushtanam, japam, sadhana, in everywhere, and he is maintaining that degree of sattvagunam necessary to make sure that the whole institution don't collapse. It is all dependent on this one person who is becoming the successor, and that is how they survive. That's the only way it can survive. So therefore, what they did, that is how these paramparas have survived. You see, 60, 70 acharyas in Kanji and all that have survived like this. This system they followed, right? So, so when there is Sattvagunam, the other forces are constantly attacking. Rajogunam and Tamogunam is constantly attacking the Sattvagunam at the same time. You know that they are together always. They are these two, Rajogunam and Tamogunam, they are good friends. And they will together attack, and Sattvam cannot handle it. Sattvagunam won't be able to survive that. So, so gradually in institutions what happens is, with the departure of the founder or the head, gradually it comes in. Rajogunam and Tamogunam, right? And next generation more Rajogunam will come, and by third generation whole thing gone, right? And that is how it is, right? So, this is how all these years, last say 1500, 2000 years, how the Vedic traditions survived in this way, by doing like this, in the way, right? It is keeping on this that they will look at the person. Shastram is not important there, Shastra Jnanam. Instead, that person is how steady he is, how far Sattvagunam is in him, and how determined he is in spiritual life, and how loyal he is to the Shastram and to the Parampara. These are the things they take into account, not his knowledge of the Shastram. Knowledge of Shastram is secondary. What is more important is what type of life he led through his early days in life, how steady he was, and how committed and loyal he is to the Shastram and to the deity in the temple. So these issues are important for the successor to be chosen, right? Because they all know that in 2-3 generations it will be gone otherwise, right? So basically, from the Vaidya Sampradaya, if you look, they'll have Agni Upasana, Agniadhanam, Agni Upasana. Whether he comes from a family where this Agniadhanam was going on regularly, and all the Anushtanam based on the Sampradayam, were they performing, where his ancestors were performing, and what kind of background he is coming from, right? It is only for these purposes that he does not have these Rajogunam and Tamogunam won't easily influence him. In other words, he is strong enough to protect himself from Rajogunam and Tamogunam. Right? So, again they know, they may not be successful in 100% in that. But to the maximum extent possible to prevent Rajogunam and Tamogunam coming in, they have to take the precautions for that. That's all they are doing. Right? So, and therefore, he will observe their food habits, ahara shuddhi, what kind of food he is, his attraction is for, and how rigid he is in following those rules. All these things are taken into account when they make the decision about the successor. Now, in institutions, modern institutions, the problem is that quite often this difficulty of finding a successor is there, because when you have all in Rajogunam, Tamogunam, whom do you choose then? If you have millions of people, but everybody is in Rajogunam and Tamogunam, how do you choose from them? So therefore, this modern system of GBC and other things has come from there. That because there was no choice left. There was no other way you could do it. And so, they will be, people who know about this, they will be this Rajogunam, Tamogunam, who are alert about these things, who are very alert what Rajogunam and Tamogunam is, they are conscious of these things. Look at the next verse. Ashastra vihidam ghoram tapyandeye tapo janaha dambam ahankara samyuktaha kamaraga bala anvidaha. Ashastra vihidam ghoram tapyandeye tapo janaha dambam ahankara samyuktaha kamaraga bala anvidaha. Ashastra vihidam ghoram. That these are the nature of the Rajogunam and Tamogunam, right? When Rajogunam and Tamogunam comes in, Shastram goes away from there. And Ashastra Vihidam means what is not accepted by Shastram, they will introduce into it. They will introduce into it. So, Asura Nishchayaha, that Praninam Altmanachaha Tapaha Nurvartayandiye Janaha Teja Damba Ahangara Samyuktaha Dambaja Ahangaraha Cha Dambaha Ahangaro Tabhyam Samyuktaha Damba Ahangara Samyuktam. Krishna is saying. You see that line 3? Dambam Ahangara Samyuktam. Krishna says. Ashastra Vihidam Goram Tapyandeye Tapo Janaha Dambo Ahangara Samyuktaha Kamaraga Balanvidaha. Yeah. So, Krishna says, when you see this anywhere, whether it is ashram or temple, these things, dambam, ahangaram, samyuktam, coming together, then you take it that temple or ashram in asuram it is. It is not devigam, it is asuram there. Asuram is working there. It may be a temple, it may be an ashram. No matter what it is, if this dambam ahangara samyuktaha, if they come together, tapo janaha, and you know that they can only make decisions like the asura's decisions. Their decisions will be asuric. So, because their willpower is all asuric, right? And this is why in Puranams, they introduce all these personalities in front of us. Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, all these personalities, why do you think they have brought it in? To show to us that you may start wondering, Ravana knew Shastram very well, isn't it? Ravana knew, he was a Brahmana, and he knew Shastram also, but this Asuric nature is so strong in him. What do you do then? And same thing with Hiranyakashipu also. Not that they don't know what's the right thing, but the vasana is so strong. Svabhavam, what Krishna mentioned before, is such, right? And you start thinking about them, that they have done such penances, tapas, what we cannot do. Remember what Hiranyakashipu did? 10,000 years he went and stood in on top of one leg and did the penances to please Brahma. So look at the determination. Same thing with Ravana also. The strength of that determination inside is so high compared to ordinary people. But the problem is, it's all asuraha. That's a difficulty, right? So you can't even think about it, the kind of penances they have done, right? And Hiranyakashipu did such penances, it forced Brahma to come. Brahma couldn't refuse it. He had to come, and Brahma had to give him what he asked for, the strength of that tapas. So tapas is very powerful thing, and they know that very well. Only thing is, it was directed in the wrong way. That's what has happened, right? And then you also have another personality like Hiranyakashipu. In the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, you will find one who went to Kashi, I think, he did this, cut his head and he wanted to offer into the, and Lord Shiva had to come. Vyamasura, or Vrgasura. Vrgasura, yes. Basmasura, they call him another name. And he, Asuric nature inside, yeah. And when Lord Shiva came, he came with Sri Parvati Devi, and he wanted to have Sri Parvati. So this is his prayer to Shiva. And Shiva understood the situation, that this is not going to go very far. And you know what happened? He wanted a blessing. Whomever I put my hand on should become, turn into ashes. And the first person he wanted to put the hand was on Shiva's head itself. So this is Asuric nature. He was even willing, part by part he was cutting his body and putting into the fire. And then finally he was willing to cut his head and putting into the fire at the end. Yeah. So these things are not possible for ordinary people. These are people with such Asuric nature, but a lot of strength inside for tapasya, right? You can even see today in many places, in villages, certain places, they'll poke this a small needle through the tongue. You may have seen that in some places. In villages they do. And you start, they put through this side and took to the other side. And you start thinking, why do they get the strength to do such things? Similarly, people jumping into the fire with the sword in the hand. All these are different types of worship. Yeah, all kinds of things goes on like that, right? So, and when you do such penances and austerities, you will get some strength from certain forces in this world. And that is all belonging to this Bhudaganas. Prayadan Bhudaganas Yacharakshamsi Rajasa, what Krishna said. But none of them are in Sattvagunam. None of them are Sattvagunam. So these are different processes of worship through Rajogunam and Tamogunam, and through that acquiring this power through these deities. So they are also there, the deities are there for that, right? So Krishna's point is that Ashastra Vihidam Ghoram Tapyandeye Tapo Janaha Dambam Ahangara Samyuktaha Kamaraga Balanvidaha. Without taking into account, gradually for self-realization, for spiritual realization, one should continue his process in the Sattvagunam, and as much as possible to live in the sattvic state, as much as possible, while chanting the holy name, or engage in meditation, and those things, what Shastram has spoken, right? And that is Shastram, following Shastram, right? What Shastram is not saying is that things like what Hiranyakashipu has done, what Ravana has done, what they have done was the process what they have spoken in the Shastram, they have used it and developed that power which is not spoken in the Shastram to go to develop their demoniac powers. Using the method of acquiring power spoken in the Shastram, they have used that method and acquired such powers which Shastram does not approve. And that's what they have gone and done. Who? Ravana and Hiranyakashipu and all that, right? And that is not acceptable to Krishna. That is what he is saying in these first two lines. Ashastra vihidam ghoram. It is ashastra vihidam. That is not Shastram approved, he says. Why? What? This ghoram, ghora karma, is not Shastram approved. And therefore, tapyandeye tapo janaha. And then they go and do tapas. What is not approved by Shastram, which is ghoram, which is, ghoram means very heavy. Ashastra vihidam ghoram. And tapyandeye tapo janaha. That tapasya they go and do that. Why do they do that? Dambam ahangara samyuktam. Both dambam and ahangaram is inside and attracted by kamaraga balanvidaha. So that is Krishna's explanation for that. Why did Hiranyakashipu and Ravana go in that route? Because of this. He's saying that here. Yeah? So, and it is not acceptable to Krishna. Krishna is saying that, right? So, like, you can see this tendency among people also. I don't know whether you have noticed this. Some people, they will come to spiritual life and then they suddenly become very rigid in following the rules. So rigid that they will decide to starve for a whole day without eating anything. They'll take it very seriously inside. That rajogunam inside is pushing them to do that. And sometimes some devotees will take to such a severe austerities, which is not spoken in the Shastram, but they will do that, right? They won't eat for a few days sometimes, to develop that strength, right? And there was recently one lady went into Rajasthan, and she set up a fire and sat in middle of that, and she was performing. She joined this Akhori group of the sannyasis. This lady, she is from the West, she joined this group and something has made her determined to acquire this power. And so she decided to do that. And when you see, she's only a young person, right? So these are situations, middle of the big fire, you sit inside that and do your sadhana there, like Panchagni Vidhi and all that, right? And this Shastram is in the Tantra. Tantra Shastram tells you a lot of ghora sadhana, they are called. Ghora sadhana means heavy sadhanas like this, which you can do very powerful sadhanas. In other words, quickly you will get the result, but it is very demanding. In other words, you got to be very very serious and very committed to that. Yeah? So, when you hear the kind of sadhana what is spoken in the Tantra Shastram, you will be frightened. If you hear some of them, right? That kind of sadhana they do. That's what Krishna is saying. Dambam ahangara samyuktam. It is coming from that. Dambam inside, ahangaram inside. Combined together, this kind of sadhana they will do, right? Dambha ahangara samyuktam. In order to that inside, there is a strong desire. There's a strong desire inside to be recognized in the world. That I am a very important person. I can do many things what others can't do. And this kind of thoughts gets inside that. Kamam krodham is inside, strongly inside. That's swabhav, kamam krodham, right? And that is what he is saying here. Kama raga balanvidaha. So what forces them to do that? These four things. Dambham ahangara samyukta. Then kama raga balanvidaha. This is what is causing them to do that. Such heavy sadhanas, torturing the body, torturing everything, and so determined to acquire the power for that. Okay. So, Hiranyakashipu also, that's why he did such a sadhana. And in Bhagavatam, if you read that sadhana, what he has done, Hiranyakashipu has done, right? it is unbelievable that Hiranyakashipu could do such a sadhana, what he has done, right? And Indra also, done sadhana and he managed to get a planet to his own due to this, through his penances in that way. There is a possibility that you don't know. When very demoniac personalities appear in this world, like Hitler and all that, you could say like this, possibly they may have done sadhana in previous life to come with such a strength inside, to the extent what he has gone and done things, right? Otherwise, that's the reason that he was able to manipulate a whole population around him to do what he did. Is it not? He managed to manipulate a whole country of people, a whole group of people in Germany and other places, and made them to do what they wanted to do because he has got that strength inside, able to control them like that, right? So that power of control over others, he had that, right? If you look into the Second World War movies, you will see how he spoke and how he did things. You can see his control over others. It was so strong, right? So similarly, you can look at Mahabharatam. You will see this a lot there. Look at Duryodhana, what he did, right? And this force has gone inside, the negative forces in Duryodhana has become so strong, right? And many people, you may have come across this many times, people ask this question in Mahabharatam, why did Bhishma and Drona listen to Duryodhana? Is it not? It's an important question. Bhishma was highly learned, powerful, very powerful person, knowledgeable also, devotee. Drona also, Brahminical background and knowledge of Shastram, everything. In spite of that, why did they listen to Duryodhana? How do you answer that question? The answer is this, that Duryodhana has acquired such a strength through this, the Rajasabhava, right? So, the question is very logical. It is logical, is it not? Bhishma is powerful, Drona is powerful, still they listen to Duryodhana rather than listening to others, right? And if they wanted that disrobing of Draupadi and similarly sending the Pandavas to the forest, all these things could have been avoided if they wanted. Who? Bhishma, Drona, if they have decided to stop it, they could have stopped Duryodhana from doing that. In fact, they could have even avoided the war if they wanted. Because Bhishma and Drona was on Duryodhana's side, that's what made Duryodhana to fight the war. To fight the war, right? In other words, Duryodhana had such a powerful control over them. Over Bhishma and Drona, right? So, Duryodhana's that influence on them, influential power on them, right? That power is more than what Bhishma and Drona had. What Bhishma and Drona had, this power of Duryodhana in controlling them was more powerful than them. His Ajna Shakti means to order them and they will listen to him in such a way, right? So if Duryodhana has drawn a line, they won't be able to cross. To such an extent, he kept them under control, right? So, the only person who could do that was Vidura. What Bhishma and Drona could not do, Vidura did that. And you know what happened in the Bhagavatam with Vidura and Duryodhana, is it not? Duryodhana wanted to finish him up there because Dhritarashtra was sitting there and Vidura put his bow and arrow there and he walked out from there. In the third canto, you can read in the beginning, right? So, why is that? Because in Vidura there was Sattugunam to that extent. He was able to do that, right? Knowledge was there, Sattugunam was there. Therefore, Sattugunam, when it is there and the knowledge is there, these forces cannot give you any trouble. No matter who it is. So, this is the best example in the Mahabharatam. This Bhishma, Drona and Vidura. Bhishma and Drona didn't have enough Sattugunam to say no to Duryodhana. Vidura had such a strong Sattugunam inside that he was able to walk away from the scene, walk out like that. It's a very interesting part in the Mahabharata when Vidura walks away from home, and then 36 years he wandered around Bharata Bhumi. He left home, he left his wife, he left his home and everything. That strength of Satugunam inside. Satugunam means knowledge, proper knowledge, which Bhishma, neither Bhishma nor Drona had that strength what Vidura had. And that is why all the other things happened. All the other things happened, right? So, particularly, this is spoken, this incident, in the commentary on Brahma Sutram, Acharya Swamiji discusses this in detail, this particular incident between Vidura. He says that in the Brahma Sutra Bhashyam, he talks about Vidura as a personality, as a great jnani, Acharya Swamiji says, it's a great jnani, and it is discussed there because it is very difficult to go beyond this kind of forces in life. You know what it is like, right? So, unless you have so much strength inside, you won't be able to go beyond these kind of forces. Like you can see in the world also, when big demons comes and they institute certain law in this world, ordinary people, you will just stand and watch this. We can't do anything about it. That's what people will say. I can't do anything about it, so what's the point in protesting? This is an attitude of most of the people, isn't it? Because we don't have that strength inside. Satugunam is not there to say no to that. Yeah. Protesting against them without Satugunam is useless. You have to have that Satugunam inside, that those who are instituting such laws in this world, force them to withdraw from that power, to the strength of Satugunam. So Vidura had that, and so unless you have such power, Satugunam, you will not be able to cross beyond this kind of forces. What happens, right? On the other hand, you look at Duryodhana, what happened? After the whole Mahabharata war was over, he was going to die, and he was lying in the battlefield, going to leave the body at any moment. Even at that time, he never regretted about anything what happened. So imagine his mind. After killing so many, responsible for the death of so many people, because of his mindset, which was very demoniac nature, and in spite of all those people who got killed, and the war he lost, in spite of all that, he didn't feel any feeling of guiltiness. He never felt guilty about it. He never felt guilty, right? So, they will not feel guilty also. That is demoniac power at its peak. When demonic nature comes in a person, he will be like this. They won't feel guilty about anything what they have done. Such is that rajogunam, tamogunam inside is such a strong thing. So, that is what... You see how Krishna puts that in the next verse? What happens to such people? Karshayandam sharirastam bhutagramam achetasaha mam chaivanda sharirastam tan vidya asura nishchayani. Asuric nature is like that, he said. Krishna is saying that. This asuric nature is such that karshayanda sharirastam bhutagramam achetasaha mam chaivanda sharirastam tan vidya asura nishchayani. So, in the last verse, in the fifth verse, Krishna talks about what makes them to do such things. Ashastra vihidam khoram tapendeya tapo janaha dambam ahangara samyuktaha kamaraga balanvidaha dambam ahangaram kamam ragam. That is what is causing them to do this. And then, how do they do that? That is this next verse, right? He is saying here they don't feel any apologetic about it. Yeah, they don't feel bad about it, what has happened. So that's what he's saying here. So, Hiranyakashipu struggled very hard to do his penances a lot, right? Can you imagine, he gave so much trouble to the five material elements. And that is how he gave them pain to them. How do you give pain to them? Because all material elements have got a personified form. Earth, water, air, ether, fire. These five material elements were given so much trouble by Hiranyakashipu. And he gave pain to them, these personalities, personified forms of the material elements. That means earth, water, air, either Varuna, Vayu, Agni, Devadas, they were feeling the pressure. Like Brahma felt the pressure. But before Brahma felt the pressure, these five material elements felt the pressure. And that is how they did that. Yeah? So Krishna is saying here that the he gave them pain and Tishta Rucha, sorry, Mam Chaivanda Sharirastam Tan Vidya Asura Nishchayan. Look at what Krishna is saying there. It's important. He's saying, Mam Chaivanda Sharirastam. Krishna is inside Hiranyakashipu also. Yeah? Krishna is inside Hiranyakashipu also. He's saying, not taking me, my presence in him, he goes and does this. Antaryami is not pleased when you do such things. That means completely ignoring Antaryami, he has gone and acted like this. That's what he is saying here. Mam chaiva anda sharirastam. Me, who is present inside him as Antaryami, he has completely ignored me and then made the decision to go and do this. Tan vidya asura nishchaya. You see how Krishna says that? Karshayanda sharirastam. Torturing the body to such an extent, Bhudagramam Acheda Saha, that all these five material elements, he has tortured them and given them pain as well. And then completely ignoring my presence inside him. You know, Hiranyakashipu also, Krishna is inside. Hiranyaksha also, Krishna is inside. Ravana also, Krishna is inside. Kumbhakarna also, Krishna is inside. Kamsa also, Krishna is inside. Sudama also, Krishna is inside. Actually, there is Krishna present everywhere, in everything. In different roles, different forms are playing this, right? So, what happened now? And he gave them trouble to all these devadas, material elements, right? Ultimately, you will see in the Bhagavatam that story when you read. Hiranyakashipu was looking for Vishnu. And he goes looking for him in Vaikuntham. Hiranyakashipu could go to Vaikuntham. And then he comes back from there, saying that I couldn't find Vishnu there, he's not there. So, Bhagavata speakers will say like this, they said that, Bhagavatam also says that, that Vishnu was hiding inside, he didn't know that. That's what ignoring means. Ignoring means that ignoring that Krishna's presence inside, acting in that way. If Hiranyakashipu had proper knowledge, he would not have gone looking for him in Vaikuntham. Can you imagine, he goes to Vaikuntham like X or a rocket people going. You say, he goes to Vaikuntham and comes back, saying that I can't find Vishnu there. Now when you read this in the Puranam, here devotees are struggling hard to get to Vaikuntham, isn't it? Where Hiranyakashipu goes there and comes back again, as though it's just like a local trip for him. And he says, I couldn't find Vishnu there. When you read in the Bhagavatam, naturally you start asking this question, isn't it? Why is that? He could go to freely to Vaikuntham and we can't go to Vaikuntham. How come he was able to go to Vaikuntham freely and coming back here again? So the answer is this, that he did not know that Antaryami is inside. In other words, what that story is saying to us is that become conscious of Krishna's presence inside, Antaryami's presence, to teach us that it is spoken in that way, right? So we don't have to go anywhere. All devadas, not only Antaryami, all other devadas also are present inside our body. You know the connections, don't you? Different devadas and different senses, they are connected to each other. Our body is a combination of all these things. Antaryami is Krishna. Then all devadas are senses of knowledge and senses of action. It's all listed there in the second canto, I think. It comes there, isn't it? Devadas praying to Krishna. So, senses of knowledge, senses of action, if you list them, 10 of them, you will see the Adhishtatra Devada and Upasya Devada for that. Mentioned in the commentaries, it's spoken who they are. So, practically, if you look at your own body, what do you find? Material elements are there. The gross material elements. That means those Devadas of the five material elements are present inside us. All the Adhishtatra Devada of the senses are present inside us. Senses of knowledge and senses of action. Antaryami is present inside us. The subtle body has got all their Adhishtadra Devadas present there. Aniruddha, Vasudeva, Sangarshana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, all that, right? So if we look at our body, what is it actually? It's a combination of Krishna as Sandaryami with all the other Devadas together. And if you take all of them from this body, what is left then? Nothing there, isn't it? So from there you have to understand this, that the all Devadas are present inside our body. And if you use this body in an unscientific way, like the way Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyakashipu, not in line with the Shastram, then Ashastram, Vihidam Ghoram, Krishna says there, isn't it? Ashastram, if you do that, basically, the Devas present in our body, they will find it difficult. Those Devadas who are present inside our body, if you use it in the wrong way, they will find it very difficult. It will create disturbances for them. And apart from that, you are completely ignoring Krishna inside as Sandaryami for this reason. And therefore, Krishna calls them as Asura Nishchayan, such people who are doing that, who torture the body and performing such heavy penances in order to achieve something what they want in this world. Karshayanda Sharirastam. Look at the words. Bhudagramam Achetasaha Manchaivanda Sharirastam Tan Vidya Asura Nishayan. So Asura means people who have not looked at Bhagavad Gita seriously. They think demon means a form. That's what they think about the demon, isn't it? Most of the people are familiar with Ravana in the Ramanand Sagar Ramayanam. And they think Ravana must be looking like this with 10 heads on. And that's how impression you get it from that. Yeah. But to understand this personality, you have to see their what Krishna talks about them here, right? Karshayanda Sharirastam Bhudagramam Achetasaha Mam Chaivanda Sharirastam Tan Vidya Asura Nishayan. Asura Nishayam they have. And that is what he is saying here, that they will torture the indriyam, senses. When you torture the senses, the Adhishtadra Devada of the senses, or the predominating deities of the senses, they feel the pain. They feel the pain when you abuse them. When you abuse them, right? And what they are doing is actually, they are flouting the instructions of mine, Krishna says. My instructions they are flouting, and that gives me also pain. They are giving me pain as well, because I am inside them as Sandaryami. Right? And in order that these things don't happen, Krishna is saying there that certain things one should follow in life for this purpose, right? So, so as Krishna explained what Asura means, Asura Nishchayam, right? In other words, they create that negative force inside us, a negative force, right? And they have already decided to go in that direction. Yeah. And after saying that, next one, Krishna is going to talk about the food. Aharam. Aharam. The importance of that. Yeah. So, the kind of food they take from that, we will be able to understand a lot of it about them, right? In the sadhana process, adhyatma sadhana, very important thing is this ahara, food, right? On this issue, many Advaita Acharyas have disagreement with Vivekananda. They have disagreement with him on that, right? He called this as kitchen religion. He called it as kitchen religion, right? And actually, religion begins with kitchen. That's the most important thing. Somehow or the other, Vivekananda spoke like that. I mean, this kind of things always happens in spiritual life, that anything related to, in the olden days, kitchen is the most important place at home, not the temple room and the deities. Nowadays it is like that, isn't it? Temple room and deities, he is given a separate place to stay. And kitchen is for your whatever you want to eat, you make, and make a plate and offer it, and then have it as much as you want. So that's the modern system. Traditionally, it is not like that. Everything is coming from the kitchen. Kitchen is the center, you can say, the nerve center of the family life is there, right? So, preparing food is a tapasya. And offering it to the deity and eating that is naivedyam, right? So, that is a tapasya itself. Cooking and offering it to the deity, right? And why it is so? Because the mind is chittavritti, isn't it? Chittavritti is the mind, right? This mind, which is lot of thought waves constantly coming in, it cannot focus on one thing. It's very nature. All the time going here, there, going everywhere, right? You don't have the strength to focus on something, right? So, for that purpose, if you have the holy name, chanting the holy name, or if you have a form to meditate upon, holy name and form to meditate upon will help to focus on spiritual side, right? And that's the only way to bring this mind under control, right? And only when you have the capacity to bring the mind under control, you will have the strength for understanding Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam and to encourage and to think about what Krishna is saying. Self-realization, in other words. Or you can say self-inquiry or self-realization. You require some strength for that. And that will only happen if you have the mind under control. Mind should be able to remain under control. And mind will only come under control when you chant the holy name, worship Krishna, and with their strength it gets into control, right? So, above all these things, if satyam, food is satyam, the food is in satugunam, the food what you eat, if it is in satugunam, right, then what will happen is that gradually the senses will come under control. Gradually the senses will come under control, right? So, if the satyam, food is satyam, naturally the mind will become satugunam. Mind will become satugunam. And you will have some taste for Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. And similarly, more absorption, atmavijaram. In other words, towards knowledge of the self, andaryami inside. And a kind of attraction towards the, towards andaryami. Able to think about andaryami sometimes. Normally people don't think about andaryami, do they? No one thinks about andaryami. Everybody is busy in the world outside. But this Krishna inside the heart, Paramatma, the inquiry will only come when you have purified yourself with these habits. Right? So that is why, and food is directly connected with the mind. The gross form is the food, its subtle form is the mind. You know, we have talked about this before. Whatever food we eat, the most subtle form of the food becomes the mind. Gross form of the food becomes the flesh and the blood and things like that. And the waste in the food, what is to be rejected, that gets rejected. So this is how the food what we get gets broken up into three. The most subtle form becomes the mind. Then the gross part of it becomes, some part of it becomes the flesh and the blood and things like that for the gross body. Some part of the food goes to the subtle body, some part of the food goes into the gross body. And what is not, neither gone to the subtle body or the gross body becomes a waste, and that's what is rejected. So this is how our food turns out at the end, what we are eating every day. We don't obviously don't worry about all that as long as this is satisfied. That's all our priority is. So, anyway, so satyam is this is it is from this understanding that they have decided that the satyam food, and if satyagunam builds up inside, it will be very favorable for advancing in spiritual path. Because if your mind gives you the support from inside, the life becomes a lot easier, spiritual life. It is the mind you are battling with all the time, is it not? Because there is not sufficient satugunam inside. You want to chant Hare Krishna, the mind says, why are you wasting your time? Mind from inside will tell you that way. Why is it like that? You are thinking that I could chant the holy name and sit there, want to chant 16 rounds or 64 rounds, whatever it may be. Mind won't agree. Mind will say, oh, it's too much time it is. Maybe this today I'll chant 4 rounds and the balance on Ekadashi day or something like that. You make some decisions. So, for this aharam, food itself, Krishna is saying that tapas is required. And we are addicted to many, many things. Everybody is addicted to some things, right? And addiction is very difficult to get rid of, right? So in this issue, is the individual has to make the decision. Shastram cannot tell you what is the right food. The food is concerned because our bodies are different. Everyone's body is different, right? So you have to find out what is satyagam food for yourself. That's the way it is. What is satyagam for you, you have to find out yourself, right? Because our body is made with this food only, right? And you will know that this particular food won't damage me, won't give me any damage. That one has to research and find out oneself. Everybody has to do it on their own. Shastram cannot help you on this issue. Shastram will say like this, that the aharam has an effect on you. And what will keep you in sattvagunam, you have to find out yourself. What aharam will keep you in sattvagunam, right? So, whichever aharam or whichever food what you take, that will not stop your sadhana or your spiritual life, disturb your spiritual life. That is, every individual has to work on that, find out that, and he should follow that. That's the injunction on that. That's why generally nobody will tell you what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat. Of course, vegetarianism is necessary. But among vegetarian food also, what is that vegetable? Some vegetables some people cannot eat. And similarly, grains also. And how do you mix with them? Of course, all this was spoken when the food was pure, manufactured pure. In today, Tesco food, the Sainsbury food, whatever you eat, it's all chemicals anyway. And that is why we are like this. No matter what sadhana you did, you are still there, where you are. It's not making any progress from there. Because everything what you buy in the market, which food is pure now? Genetically modified, they are saying something. These big companies, they manipulate everything to increase their profit. Shareholders have to make money. So food is the victim of that, and we are the victims of that. So our life is centered around all these things. Where else do you go for the food? So you can see how sad the situation is. It's a disaster. Whole thing is a disaster. You can't get milk properly, you can't get butter properly, you can't get ghee properly, you can't get even vegetables properly. Vegetables, when you go and look into the market, it looks as though fresh from the garden comes there. It has been plucked for weeks before, and then all kinds of chemicals are sprayed on that, and so that it requires very posh and very attractive when it comes into the supermarket, is it not? But how many chemicals have gone into it, only God alone knows. So anyway, so therefore, the Shastram is saying like this, the aharam of every individual, he has to find out himself what suits his constitution. And Make that aharam, what you are eating, make it divine, he said. And that is prasadam. So when you, what you are eating, you are making it divine, and that is prasadam, right? So if you do it that way, it will have its effect, right? And making it divine. So you can give up sandhyavandanam in a day. Sometimes you can give it up. But aharam is difficult to give up, isn't it? Aharam is required. Everyone needs the aharam food, right? Three times from birth to death, people are eating. So if you make this aharam means what you are taking inside, if it makes favorable for spiritual life, Bhagavad Arathana, right? Every time when you are taking that, it is a meditation. Every time when the food goes inside. And sometimes you can see certain type of food if you eat, the mind is peaceful. You have to test yourself these things. Certain types of food when you eat, you feel peace inside and a kind of feeling of satisfaction, right? Creates meditation inside. And it's not good enough just getting the food inside somehow or the other, right? So, in Zen Buddhist, we'll call this as mindfulness. Mindfulness, right? It's a kind of a meditation that every type of food when you eat, becoming alert about that, that alertness, right? And many great personalities, spiritual personalities, they followed very rigidly these things, right? And what a person who is doing sadhana, what he is doing is, little by little, he is becoming more and more alert. That's what he is doing, right? And in other words, it begins with the food. In food, he develops this alertness first. And gradually, this alertness has to go into all other areas of life. All other areas of life, right? So, while eating, it becomes a sabariya. In other words, Vaidika Sampradayam is like that. Remember yesterday we talked about something. What was that? Vaidika Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. Right? Prema Bhakti, Para Bhakti, Raganuga Bhakti and all. No point in discussing that. For ordinary people, it has no meaning. It means nothing to them. And why is that? Because those who have gone in that path, who have gone beyond Vedam, they are those personalities. The Vedic injunctions don't apply to them anymore. They can eat anything, it won't affect them. They have come to that state. Aharam won't have any effect on them. To such an extent, they have gone beyond the rules and regulations. Why? Because of the strength of devotion. They have reached that state of Parabhakti or Premabhakti. These are three different names for that. Parabhakti, Prema Bhakti, Raganuga Bhakti. These are the three names for that. So that bhakti is on a different plane altogether. And that is why the best examples for that are the gopis. Gopis spoken in that way. And as you know, who are these gopis? In the previous lifetime, they had spent time with Ramachandra. And they are these great rishis who have come as gopis. Yeah? Similarly, Upanishads personified, Vedam personified, Upanishads personified, they have come as gopis. And similarly, women from the higher planets, from Brahmalokam and others, they have come associated with Krishna in this appearance as gopis. So to think that we can also follow them and become like that is an illusion. It is not going to happen. It's not possible also. And that is why their spontaneous relationship with Krishna, and there is on a completely different plane altogether. It is wrong. Sometimes we devotees also get into problem because of this. Somebody comes and tells us that, Raganuga Bhakti is superior to Vaidya Bhakti. So let me start doing Raganuga Bhakti from now on. Raganuga Bhakti is not so cheap. It is only possible for personalities like them. We have to know our position where we are at. For us, it is Vaidya Bhakti. In Vaidya Bhakti, many lifetimes when you do that, at some point in time you become qualified for Raganuga Bhakti when Krishna gives that to you. Only then you can have that. So, if you look at Gopi's background, where they came from, what their previous lives were, automatically you won't think about it much. Because it's an impossible thing. Great, all of them are rishis, many of them, have come as gopis to associate with Krishna. Isn't it? Ramachandra walked through the forest. Ramachandra had a lot of association with the rishis in the forest. 12, 14 years when he spent there, he was associating with the rishis. And the rishis wanted to associate with Ramachandra. Ramachandra said, you will have that in my next appearance. And they were given that. So, Sanatana Goswami mentions this also in that Vaishnava Toshini, that these are personalities who had come from the from a very higher plane of existence. Rishis, Upanishads personified, and women from the higher planets, very higher planets, who have gone to a very higher level, right? Shrutichari and rishis, all that is listed there, right? So, when we see that, all that, oh, now I'm following them, that looks a little bit misunderstanding there. There's something seriously wrong, right? Thing like that. Anyway, that's the thing. So, Krishna is saying here that Vaidika Sampradayam, that's what we are talking about. Vaidika Sampradayam, right? That is why in Vaidika Sampradayam, that once you have served the leaf or a plate for that, they'll sprinkle the water on that first, and then a certain mantram is chanted, and then only the food is served, right? And you are very hungry, you want to eat straight away. You don't have the patience to wait for all that, right? Why? Because there's no discipline, isn't it? There's no discipline. So these are things individuals have to look after themselves according to their strength and to their capacity. That's all you can say about it. You can't bring one rule and tell the whole world to follow it. It won't work. The type of food what you eat, you have to select and choose yourself what suits you so that you are able to focus on spiritual life. That type of food. You have to do the experiment and find out the right food that suits you. Your habits, your nature, right? And choose the food in that way. Similarly, these disciplines also one has to practice it as far as eating is concerned, right? And after deciding which food to eat, how to eat, these things, in this way that satvigam, it is in the satvanam, that aharam, if you take that, in that case, your sadhana will be good. Your sadhana will be good. In Ramayanam, Ramachandra goes to the forest, right? And he meets up with different sages. Agastya, Bharadwaj, all very famous personalities in the Vedic tradition. Atri, Vasishtha was also there. Vishwamitra and many others, great, great rishis. He is meeting them in the forest, right? And even after Ravana came and stole Sita Devi, even after that he is seeing the rishis there, right? And then he comes to Shabari's ashramam. And when he got there, Shabari was a very, very old woman. Very old she was, right? And Ramachandra is having a conversation with her. And while Vaidiki talks about her, her hair was such, it's like silver ray, it's like that, yeah? Completely white in that way, right? And Ramachandra addresses her, Mother Shabari, who has got your wealth as austerities and penances. That's how he addresses her. In Valmiki Ramayanam, he addresses her, my mother Shabari, you who has got your wealth, austerities and penances, right? Then he is asking her, such an old person, Shabari, Ramachandra is asking her, is food under control? Everything is under your control. Has it come under your control? Ramachandra is asking this to Shabari, right? So, what he meant was that, is your diet has come according to your proper understanding and it is helping you your sadhana in spiritual life? That's what it meant by that. That question when Ramachandra asked Shabari, has the diet is under control? He didn't mean that whether you are getting all the vitamins and... that's not what he meant. What he meant was, for yogis, if the food under control means, is that food helping you in your sadhana. Or you have found out what your food is, the right food, what one should eat. Have you got to understand what is required and have you got that properly set up in that way, right? So that is what Ramachandra asked Shabari at that time, right? So that food when you eat, which does not create problems for your spiritual life, for doing sadhana, and that food that gives you peace inside the mind, keep shanti inside, all that things is what is implied in that. When Ramachandra asked this question, that's what was implied in that, asking that question, right? Then he talks about the different process of tapasya, what is involved. Ramachandra asking her about different tapasya, what she is performing, and he says to her, are you able to recognize the anger before it comes, that the anger is coming? For most of us, we get angry first, and then we do all rubbish things, and then we start thinking, why did I get angry? Afterwards. But apparently yogis who become very sensitive and who have become very alert in spiritual life, when the anger comes, they are able to sense it, that the anger is coming. So Ramachandra asked Shabari, are you able to sense before the anger comes? And have you come to that state that you are able to control the anger? And your mind is peaceful. All these are symptoms of tapasya. Proper tapasya takes you to this state, right? And so this will mean that if you have all these qualities, food under control. Control means, as I said, if it is creating that satya bhavam inside, mind is peaceful and able to do sadhana very well, that sattvagunam is building up, all that experience is what that means, that food under control means, right? So Ramachandra asked Shabari, have you got that first? Then he asked, are you able to sense before the anger comes to your mind? You see how much importance Ramachandra gives to everything inside, like Krishna does the same thing. Everything inside is more important. And then Ramachandra asked this question, that have you got control over your anger and the mind is peaceful? Because if all these things have happened, it means your tapas is working. Your tapas is working. So the symptom, or the proof of your tapas is a success is this, that the mind becomes in a meditative mode all the time. In a spiritual consciousness, all the time. Not getting disturbed by the things outside. That is the proof of, so, tapasya leads to this dhyana. Tapasya leads to dhyana. This is why tapasya is required. Disciplining the body, disciplining the mind, all these things, right? So, in other words, if that dhyana vastita tadgadena manasa pashyandiyam yogino. You remember in the Bhagavatam? Dhyana andastha? Dhyanavastha. Dhyanavastha tadgadena manasa pashyandiyam yogino. Devaya tasmai namah. Right? You remember in Bhagavad Gita, 12th canto. Dhyanavastha tadgadena manasa. Mind in a dhyanam state all the time. Meditative mood. Not disturbed by rajogunam tamogunam. Always in that sattvagunam, shanti state. Dhyanavastita tadgadena manasa. It is in that dhyanam, pashyandiyam yogino. Yogi see you. Pashyandiyam yogino. Yasyandam na vidusura asuragana devaya tasmai nama. Asuras and suras cannot see that unless this dhyanavastha comes inside. So you can see Bhagavatam says that here. So that avastha, what that means is, even without doing sadhana, the mind is in that state. Without doing sadhana. That's that state. Without even doing sadhana. Normally, people do sadhana. And suppose sometimes you will see devotees also. When they get very disturbed, they'll take the beats bag and start chanting. You can see that when they do that, that they are disturbed inside something. Many devotees do that. When they get very disturbed inside, they'll take the beats bag. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Immediately go very strongly chanting. Because inside there is some disturbances have happened. Yeah. So, not like that. In other words, without even chanting, they are in that state. Dhyanavastha. Right? So, mind is so peaceful inside that they don't need to chant at that time. They are so peaceful inside. So then Ramachandra asked him that all these things, has it happened to you? This conversation between Ramachandra and Shabari, right? So this aharam, food, what is a big tapas. It is finding out what is the ideal food for everyone according to his own body and constitution, and that itself is a yogam. Now, when grihastha leaves home and goes to vanaprastha ashramam, that means, you know what they say? At home you cooked on the fire, agnipakvam. In the forest you cook with the sunlight, suryapakvam. It's called. So by then, you could not control your mind in the householder life. So you go to household vanaprastha ashramam, and there you tighten up further. You make it more difficult. In other words, the austerities increases, the strength of austerity, right? So what they will do, instead of cooking food now, they will only eat that food what is ripened by sunshine, that like fruits and things like that. Or even if it's the roots, they will leave it in the sunshine for some time. And when it is enough, ready to eat, they will eat it, right? So all these things has to be done with great care, alertness, right? But the important thing of all this is, this dhyanam should come inside. Dhyanam means that meditation, mind of, mode of meditation inside, right? That should not be broken, right? And that should be looked after. So another instance is, the quantity of food what you consume should be limited for that. And similarly, the food also should sustain the health of the body, this body. And keeping all these things, the person who is practicing yoga system, he has to choose the food. He has to choose the food, right? And these are all related to eating habits. Now imagine people who eat all kinds of food. Buffaloes, cows, then snakes, and then hogs. People eat all this sort of food. It's all over the world. It's not hogs, dogs, camels, asses, everything. They eat all these things. Suppose if that all has gone inside, how do you expect any sattva-gunam inside? Where can there be any sattva-gunam inside, right? So, ahara shuddhau sattva-shuddhi, sattva-shuddhau dhruva smritihi, smriter labhe sarva grandhinam vipramokshaha. Prabhupada has quoted that Upanishad statement in the Bhagavad Gita Bhashya, right? Sanat Kumaraha is from the Chandogya Upanishad. Sri Narada Maharshi talking to, Kumara is talking to Narada Maharshi, right? So, when all the defects, all the impurities inside, when it goes away, if all this has happened, only after that, the instructions given by the guru will have its impact on the disciple. Disciple have heard so many things from the shastram and from the guru as well, but in order that things to have its impact on you, this stage has to come. According to shastra, this stage has to come. That level of purity is required, right? So, aharam, if food is proper, shuddham, then sattva-gunam will become pure. And when sattva-gunam becomes pure, then the yoga process will start working. Whether it is bhakti yogam or jnana yogam or karma yogam, whatever yoga process you follow, japam, dhyanam, everything will become in order. Right? Otherwise, everything will be on the surface. Otherwise, everything will be on the surface. And that is what most of the people go through. Because these things have not come under control, aharam is not under control. Similarly, other things as well. Because aharam itself takes a long time to find out, and it can change according to your stage in life. What aharam one should take and one should not take. And then what creates sattva-guna. What gives you peace inside, that's what matters. Not that what gives good for the... You don't check the vitamins, I'm saying. You look at what is giving shanti inside. and you are able to survive that. That way, able to find out the right food. Generally, people will say, "Oh, you take prasadam, everything will be fine." That's a very general statement it is. But more when you come to seriously thinking about it, you have to take it in this way. Right? And if this japam, chanting, is not done properly, then it is on the surface only. Just on the surface, right? Similarly, pranayama, those who are doing pranayama, they also won't be able to do it properly. Anything what you take inside is a food. You know, when you say food, it doesn't mean only what you eat through the mouth. Through all the senses, what you are taking it inside is a food going inside, right? But out of that, important is this food, what goes through the mouth, right? Because that's our life in this world. It is for that we are working in this world and maintaining this body. The food is such an important part of life, right? So this making food as sattvikam, Krishna is saying here, is one of the important parts of the yoga process, right? And one should endeavor for that, and it will benefit a lot from that. And in that way, Krishna says that your spiritual life, bhakti, sadhana, everything will bring shanti inside. Shanti inside, right? So that is what it is. And then again, talking about it, Krishna is saying, aharastvabhi sarvasyam. Okay, let's have a break. We'll continue after that. Chedo darpanam arjanam bhaumaha davagdinirvapanam shreyakkaidava chandriya vidaranam vidyavadhu jivanam anandambudivardhanam pradipada purnamrada swadhanam sarvatnam supanam varam vijayade shri krishna sankirtanam nam namakari bahuda nija sarvashakti tatrarpida nemida smaranena kala edadrishi tava kripa bhagavan mamabhi durdeivamidrishamiha janinanuragaham trinaravishuni chena tarorabhi sahishnuna amanina amanadena kirtaniya sadahari nadhanam najanam nasundarim kavidamva jagadishakamai mama janmani janmani shwari bhavadal bhaktirahai dugitvai ayi nandadanuja kingaram padidamam shame bhavam budau kripaya tava pada pangajastita dhuli sadrisham vijindayam nayanam galadashrudharaya padanam gadgadaruddhaya akina pulagair nichidam kadavabhau tava namagrahane bhavishyati yuga idam nimeshena chakshusha pravishayidam shunyayidam jalvastikal sarvam govinda virahename ashlishya vapadaradam pinashtumam adarshanam marmahadam karotuva yathathathava vidathadvilam malpranathasuna sunna yevana paya sarvatra govinda nama sankirtanam govinda govinda. So, only through tapasya and through shraddha, when all these stages one has crossed, after that one can expect some impact of Guru Padesha, Guru's instructions. Whatever you have learned from the Shastram and whatever you have learned from the Guru, Guru's instruction or the one whom you have, if it has to come into effect in someone, all these stages one has to cross. And then you will find your japam, chanting, dhyana, meditation, everything will come in a proper state. In other words, you will see the impact happening inside, right? Otherwise, everything will be on the surface. It's just on the surface. That is why after several years, 25, 30, 40, 50 years sometimes, when chanting Hare Krishna, nothing has happened. You just feel that, oh, I've become old, that's all. That's the only thing happened. Only conscious that you've become old. That's the only thing you know. 50 years you've been chanting and after that you're still thinking, then what's this all about? So the reason is this, that the way it has to happen hasn't happened. Unfortunately, that's all it could do, because people are also like that, the system is like that, organization is there, and all these things has its effect, right? We shouldn't say too much about it, because then people think it is criticism. It shouldn't be taken that way. You have to understand that why progress is not happening in spiritual life. Because all these obstacles are there prior to that, to cross over. Similarly, all other senses also, like food through the mouth, but what about through the rest of the other senses? Everything has to become pure. And then out of that, the main thing is the food, of course, right? Because that is life. Therefore, making food as sattvikam is the greatest yoga, and one has to endeavor for that, and it will benefit a lot. And in that way, our process of worship or spiritual life will become bhakti, shanti, samadhanam, peace, everything will come from that. Look at that, what how Krishna says that in the next verse. Aharastubhi sarvasya trivido bhavati priya yajna tapas tatha dhanam tesham vedam imam shrunu. He says, for all living entities needs the food, and in the same way, your yajnam, your tapasya, your dhanam also takes three different forms, each one of them. Yajnam, tapasya, dhanam. And he is going to talk about that. Yeah. So, this satunam, rajogunam, tamogunam is not only food, in others as well. Everything Krishna is going to say. Particularly those ones which is practical, prayogiyam, which is very practical here, right? Therefore, aharam first. He's going to talk about aharam, aharam food, yeah? So look at how he defines that in the 8th verse. Ayu sattva bala aarogyam sukha preeti vivardhanam rasya snigdha sthira hridya ahara sattvika priya. So sattvagunam, if one has sattvagunam in him, this is a topic you have to study a lot first about different types of food, and you have to experiment with it in your own life, and you have to find out yourself what is suitable for you. That's what this is. Ayu sattva balam aarogyam sukha preeti vivardhanaha rasya snigdha sthira hridya ahara sattvika priya, right? So this particular verse is something individual has to do on his own. He has to study the different types of food available. Not looking for where is the best offer. Not that. What kind of food, what effect it has got on you. Obviously, as I said before, that we are in a very unfortunate situation with the type of food being fed to us now. All over the world it is like that now. It's farming is done on industrial scale. And imagine their goal is always to increase the productivity so that they can maximize the profit. And they will use all kinds of chemicals necessary so that it stays sufficient time to be transported from the place where it's made to the supermarkets here. It should survive till then, isn't it? So food is not fresh actually. It's old food, but all chemicalized and treated and then sent to us for sale, and we buy it happily and eat it. Yeah? So this, I can only read it, what Krishna is saying, but then how do you practice it in today's world? That's a bit of a thinking required, right? So one has to experiment and find it out. In this verses, you can only tell you about in general about it, right? you cannot say that you should eat this particular food, make a list out of it and send somebody. That's not possible. You can't make a list and tell someone that you should eat this food. That's not possible, right? That's what it's saying. Ayuhu. You see, Krishna begins with that. Ayuhu. Ayuhu means, he's referring to Ayurveda. Ayurveda, ayu means pranan. Pranan inside, right? And that means a jiva survival, jiva inside, it's a survival, depends on pranan. As long as the pranan is working, the jiva will stay. Once the pranan leaves, jiva has to leave the body, right? So Ayurvedam is also a yoga shastram, it is. Yeah? And the difference is, allopathy is does experiments, research, and they invent new medicines on that basis. Through experiments and research, they find it out. And there is no need for Ayurveda and allopathy to fight on any issues. But Ayurveda is based on a different principle than allopathy. We got to know that, yeah? Ayurveda purpose, when Rishis developed Ayurveda or when they presented Ayurveda to us, Ayurveda is considered to be a Upaveda. Upaveda means a supplementary Veda. Main Veda, the four Veda. Then there is supplementary Veda, isn't it? Four, that's how they say, total 14. If you study all the 14, you have a general idea of the Vedic knowledge, Vedic hierarchy, you can say, on the books, what is involved in that. So major four Vedas, then Chandasa, Niruktam, Kalpam, Jyotisham, Vyakaranam, all, there are six of them, all of them are the Upavedam. And then again, supplementary to that is comes Ayurveda, yeah? So Ayurveda, Rishis have created that in such a way that how one should live in this world. They believe that if you live in a particular way, you won't get sick. You won't get sick if you live in a particular way, right? And if you look into the Ayurvedic texts, what the Rishis have given, Ashtanga Hridayam, that's a famous book. Bhagavadacharya, Ashtanga Hridayam and all that. What it talks about, most of it in that, how one should live in this world. That's what is spoken there, right? They call it as charya. That means what things one should take control of in life while eating is concerned. And they are saying, if you have restricted your lifestyle properly, there is no need for medicines. That's how Ayurveda says that, right? But if you cannot control your life habits, eating habits, then what is the use of taking medicines? So their approach is that if you live a lifestyle where you have a good control on all these things, eating habits, sleeping habits, and all other our lifestyle, if it's proper control, he says you won't require much medicine in life as such, right? And so in other words, we do whatever we want in life and then when you get sick, you go to pharmacy to get the medicine. That's not Ayurvedic system. Ayurvedic system is you live a proper life and by chance if you get sick, then you can have certain cure for that. This is the difference in the approach. Ayurveda gives stress on the lifestyle more than lifestyle means how regulated you are in your habits and in your, how you keep your mind and senses under control. And similarly, the type of food what you eat, place where you live, and your association with the world, outside world, how you control that. So all these things are given importance in Ayurveda. Later on, after doing all that, still if you are getting sick, there are certain medicines. And if medicines also is not working, then Ayurveda will say it is your prarabdham. This is the Ayurvedic approach. First they say you live a lifestyle proper lifestyle, right? Lifestyle, they give importance to that. Even after living that lifestyle, still illness comes sometimes. And for that the medicine is available, certain medicines. And even after using the medicines, if you are not able to cure it, what that means is it's prarabdha. There is no way out of that, right? And according to Ayurveda, that all diseases come due to sinful life, sinful activities. And that we can understand. Purva janma kritam papam vyadhi rupena jayate. It comes to us, our body, in the form of diseases. Different kinds of diseases. Some people suffer heavily, isn't it? Years and years they have to stay in the, as a patient, and they'll try different types of treatments and all that. So all that becomes very difficult, right? So Ayurveda is a Upaveda of Rigveda. Ayurveda is a Upaveda means a supplementary Veda of Rigveda, right? Some people say Ayurvedam is a Upavedam for Atharvanavedam, right? But generally it is accepted among the learned circles that it is a Upavedam of Rigveda. Because it is a science of life in this world, right? Then to that Shastram, lot of other things came in later. So these verses, what you are reading now, 8th, 9th and all that, basically it is Ayurveda. It's basically Ayurveda it is. Which one? This verse 8, 9, 10, all of them are Ayurveda it is. Ayurveda verses they are, right? So Krishna is saying here that how to improve Ayu. Ayu means Ayusha, lifespan, or Pranan. Because Ayusha, your lifespan and Pranan are connected to each other. Pranan is the force inside us, isn't it? You remember the five types of Pranan. Once that Pranan leaves, you have left the body. Once the Pranan leaves, you have left the body. When we die, there is an order in which we leave the body. There is a structure for that. When different pranans will say goodbye to us and we salute, see you next body. They'll come back to us later. But so similarly, when pranan leaves, Ayurvedic physicians know, some of them were very expert at it, in knowing, and they have given the name for different pranans when they leave. And how many times you will be breathing pranan before you die, right? And they know that at a particular time that's the last one. Last pranan, inhaling that, and then you are gone after that, yeah? So here Krishna is saying here that pranan is connected with food, aharam, right? Which should improve your survival in the body here. And that helps pranan. That's what he is saying here. That aharam and pranan are connected to each other. And this pranan, what we are talking about, is fire. Agni it is. Agni, right? And fire that you find outside, fire in this world, that fire is inside us as well. It's one of the material elements, isn't it? Earth, water, we say panchabhutam. Earth, water, air, ether and fire. So the fire that is outside, that is present inside us, and that is what is called Vaishwanaran. The fire that is inside us, the fire element of the five material elements, that is present inside us, is called Vaishwanara. You will see in the 15th chapter, Krishna mentioned that, Aham Vaishwanara Bhutva, Praninam Deham Ashrita. Remember? And Pranabhana Samayukta, Pajamyannam Chaturvidham. Krishna has spoken that before. In the 14th verse, in the 15th chapter, Aham Vaishwanara Bhutva, Praninam Deham Ashrita, Pranabhana Samayuktam, Pajamyannam Chaturvidham, he said. Right? So this Vaishwanara inside, he is the one actually digesting the food. We have already cooked the food in the kitchen, but there is another cooking going on inside, and that's done by Vaishwanara. We have cooked with the British gas, but inside Vaishwanara cooks the food later. And that is how that food becomes digested and accepted to the body, right? So, and that Agni, Vaishwanara, he is present throughout the body, right? And which is pranan, but in the Agni form. How pranan becomes Agni, right? Pranan is actually air, isn't it? Pranan is air. Vayu, it is Vayu. How can it become fire? Because fire, in its most subtle form, is air. You remember five material elements, how they come in order. You've got space first, Agasham. From Agasham comes Vayu. From Vayu comes Agni. So in other words, Agni or fire, its a subtle form is Vayu. So that is how pranan becoming Agni inside us. So you can't say anything about it because its rishis have thought through all these things. And Vedam says so. So there is no further questioning that. Pranan becomes Vaishwanaran
Just like Vayu becomes Agni.
Vayu becomes Agni. So, when Agni leaves the body, it means that Pranan is leaving the body. And that is why at the time of death, the body becomes cold straight away. It's not. Only for a few minutes it stays warm. And then the body just becomes very cold. Why? Agni has gone. Pranan has gone, Agni has also gone with that, right? So that is the reason when you die, the body becomes cold, right? So, and this means that Pranan, which is air, its gross form is Agni. Subtle form is Pranan or air. Gross form is Agni or Vaishvanara, right? And from wind or air, Agni can come, air can come, right? And that is why when there is fire, if the wind comes, the fire will become bigger. That's the reason behind that. This is the reason behind that. That wind and fire are connected to each other. When they catch fire, somewhere, if the fire catches somewhere, and biggest problem is, you remember when they have this forest fire, what happens? If there is a whirlwind or if there is a strong winds, that's what spreads the fire all over very quickly. And the forest, whole forest starts burning because of that. This connection with the fire and the wind is so strong, right? So, and wind will make it burn much more. Wind is giving this help for that, right? So, for a person who is doing sadhana in life, as far as he is concerned, for him, for a sadhaka, what is important? Japam, chanting, dhyanam, meditation, right? And in order to remain in that state, he needs some power, right? He needs some strength inside, isn't it? To remain steady in chanting, to remain steady in the, in order to have that meditation inside, dhyanam. For that, he requires certain power. And there are the two things. One is that power, and the second thing is peace, shanti inside. Only when you have shanti, dhyanam will come. Only when you have power, you can do the things. So these two things, every sadhaka needs it. One who is in spiritual life, he needs both of these things. What he needs, power to do the sadhana, energy in other words, and he needs a peace inside, shanti inside, for able to execute it properly, peacefully, right? So, that peace inside, that has to come from knowledge. Shanti. Peace is that shanti. Shanti inside has to come from knowledge, right? And that is coming from the Atma, Antaryami. That has to come from Antaryami. Knowledge has to come from the Atma. No, there's no other else, where else it can come from, right? So, that is coming from the field of Atma, which is very stable inside, Antaryami. So depending on Antaryami's help, your knowledge of spiritual life will become more and more strong, in other words. And that is what will make the shanti inside. Peace, what you experience inside, that peace, it comes from knowledge, and that knowledge comes from Antaryami. That's where it's coming from, right? On the other side, power, that is, in order to do that, you require pranan, prana shakti. Prana's power is required. And if that pranan is very weak, you won't find anything, able to do anything, if the pranan is weak, right? And you won't be able to do anything, no happiness in doing anything, you're not satisfied with anything, right? So pranan has to become wake up. You remember I mentioned before that if the pranan is very well controlled, then mind will come under control. Mind will come under control. Yeah. So, pranam, that is why pranayamam everybody follows. It is a part of the Tantra Shastram also. They are trained to do daily 108 times pranayama minimum. Or more people, there are people who are doing more than that. It's a part of Yoga Shastram also. Patanjali's Yoga Shastram also talks about pranam. Right? So, that is the reason that if you look at a traditional Brahminical culture, what they will do? They will do parisajanam, they call it. With water in the hand, they do parisajanam. Three times, they circle the food before they eat.
And while they're doing that, they chant the mantram called Pranaya Swaha. Pranaya Swaha. Right? That means they're saying that, for the sake of pranan, I am offering this annam, food inside, right? In other words, the devata, the predominating deity of pranan, they are doing the upasana for that, right? So, strictly speaking, Vaidika karma anushtanam, and just like sandhyavandanam, three times sandhyavandanam, Veda adhyayanam, studying Vedam, all these things is normally done in the river banks, sitting there, and first become familiar with the pranam, and making a contact with the pranam. Pranam is air, so you have a conversation with the pranam while chanting the Gayatri. This is all in the higher level of Vaidika Sampradaya we are talking about. You see, in the modern world, everything is a namesake, it's done. Just as a token of the original one. You may have to look at it from the plain word, the rishis, how they did that. Only then you will know the seriousness behind it. How serious they were about these things. But now everything is modernized, right in the middle of the city of London. You are doing pranayama. What pranayama is that going to help? It has a very limited effect also. The thing is that all these things are from its original state when it was written and how they practiced it. From that it has come down to a very different level today. So when we are able to have that relationship with pranam, and able to get to know pranam well, and able to take all the secrets from pranam, he is called a vidyarthi. He is a student. He is called a student in the shastram. Not the one who goes to school and college, he is not even considered a student. In the shastram, they call it a student. The one who is able to familiarize with the pranam's movement inside the body. Remember, five pranams, isn't it? And five supplementary pranams as well. So there are total 10. Able to know the movement of all these different pranams in the body, and able to understand which pranam is giving you trouble for the body, right? Ayurvedam, they teach all these things about the different types of pranam, right? So, student is the English word for vidyarthi, isn't it? That's all you can say. Vidyarthi. Vidyarthi, that's the right word. So, vidyarthi means one who is able to have this communication with the pranam properly and able to get all the secrets of the pranam, how it's working inside, within his own body, is a pranam. So, without knowing about pranam, there is no Ayurveda. If you want to study Ayurveda, you have to know the science of prana. Science of prana, right? So, and physician, Ayurvedic physicians, the main qualification is that he should have understood prana very well. In other words, he should have knowledge of the prana. Now there is Ayurvedic colleges and there is nothing. All these things are gone. They are also doing like the way we run medical colleges now. Ayurveda college is also done in the same way. So therefore, when they come out, they are not much different than the allopathy doctors. But traditionally, when Ayurvedic physicians were there, who had good upasana of Dhanendri and all that, they will have a good knowledge of this movement of the pranam inside. So Ayuhu, Krishna said that, you remember? Ayuhu, he said. He begins that word. So Ayuhu means pranam. That's what he's talking about, right? If you compress the Vedic knowledge in Vedam, there is only two things. One Brahmam, which is Sachidananda Brahmam, Satyachitananda Brahmam, and second one is Pranam. These only two things. Brahmam and Pranam, right? In other words, one is Chaitanyam, the other one is Pranam, right? In another way, if you say that, in different ways people present this, right? One is Shiva, other one is Shakti. One is energy, other one is energetic. So this is the way it is. Vedam will say like this, Brahmam and Pranam, or in other words, Chaitanyam, living force, consciousness, and Pranam, energy. Or in other words, themselves, they will say Shiva and Shakti, right? So that Shakti is Pranam. Shakti is Pranam, right? And Pranam is the one referred to here as Ayuhu. Remember? Ayu sattva balarogyam sukha preeti vivardhanaha rasya snigdha sthira hridya ahara satvika priya. Ahara satvika priya, right? So, when you make your offer, or making your prasadam, your after bhoga, you cooked and made prasadam, and when you are naivedyam, it is called, whom are you offering that to? This pranan. Actually, to the pranan. And what you are intake is taking it, that is called nivedyam, right? So, you are actually offering first respects to pranan. Pranan is also Krishna's another energy. So, devotees will say, I am offering it to Krishna. And in the devotional language, you will say, Krishna is pleased with my cooking, and Krishna is enjoying my cooking, and things, and we feel a happiness like that. That's the devotee's style of saying that. The yoga way is saying in this way, that pranan inside, pranan who is Krishna himself in another form, in other, that's the way you can look at it, right? So, and that means, it should be done with such a seriousness, and with great care, this whole process of cooking, offering, eating, all these things, they had so much attention given to it, importance given to it. You can't reach anywhere near the standard what they have said today. It's impossible. It's impossible. And everything, higher values in life, when it comes to lower levels, it will become very diluted in that way, right? Now, you see what happens, sometimes devotees also will say this, that thus all the food has to be chapatis and sabjis and vegetables the way it is. Why can't we have pizza? Why can't we have, what's the other one? Noodles and pastas and all that. It's all vegetarian. So that means they have not understood actually the shastram behind it. Whether it is chapati or whether it's puri, whether it's pizza or whether it is something else, if these things are not instituted in that, it is not prasadam. What is spoken here? With this understanding, what Krishna is saying here, right? It is not what type of food what you are eating. It is what is behind that food, how that has come into that way, right? So, so you are offering to the pranan, I am not eating, and this is a secret of yoga process, right? And if you understand this process, there is examples in the Puranam to tell us these things, how it works, how this system works. You heard about Agastya Maharshi, haven't you? Very famous rishi, very short as well, very short. And everybody used to make fun of him because he is so small in size, right? Ramachandra goes to Agastya Maharshi and they have conversation each other. Ramachandra and Agastya Maharshi, they have conversation each other. Right? So, this Agastya Maharshi, he has when a person becomes perfect in this vidya, one Rakshasa, his name is Vatapi. Vatapi wanted to, he ate him. Actually, what they done was, Vatapi got into inside his stomach. This Rakshasa Vatapi, right? Through his food, he got inside. You'll be surprised to see, sometimes rishis ate meat. Vasishtha ate. And Agastya ate meat. So, blanketly, you can't say that meat eating is whole thing is wrong. They have crossed this limit, you see. They are not controlled anymore because the rishis are such powerful people when they can do certain things which will not affect them, unlike us. So these rules and regulations, you can't go and tell Vasishtha that you have to follow all the four regulative principles, or to Vishwamitra, or to Agastya. They have gone beyond all these things, right? That's why they are called rishis, right? So Vatabi got inside us, through his food, Vatabi managed to get inside Agastya. And the plan was, Vatabi wanted to get inside and break open Agastya's stomach and come out from that. And that way trying to kill Agastya. That was Vatabi's plan, right? So Agastya took the food, and many other people have tried this before. And Agastya took the food saying, Pranaya Swaha. He ate Ilula, this demon has gone inside. Then the Vatabi has gone inside, right? Then Ilula, the Rakshasa, he will call Vatabi from outside. Vatabi is inside Agastya's stomach. And Ilula will call from outside, from Vatabi to come out from the stomach, right? That time, when Ilula called Vatabi, Agastya told Ilula, Vatabi won't be coming anymore. He said, he will come out through the other hole, he said. That's how Agastya Maharshi replied like this. Agastya told him that you can see him tomorrow morning when the food is digested and everything will be digested, because Vatabi is a Rakshasa and he has gone inside through his yogic power. Rakshasa also got that inside Agastya and trying to kill Agastya. But Agastya, because he had that strength in him, when he said Pranaya Swaha and ate that food where Vatabi was present in that, Vatabi got digested. That shows the power of Agastya, Agastya's power. Even after eating a demon called Vatabi, it got digested inside. Yeah. So if Pranan wants it, any food can be digested. Any food can be digested. And any food will be suitable for you, provided the Pranan agrees with you. So, so nowadays we have dietitians, isn't it? Modern dietitians, they will decide for you what is the best diet for you and all. People go to them, isn't it, to decide about the diet so that you keep slim and your weight is not gone beyond certain weight, whatever your height. You are not obese. And for that these dietitians are there, right? So they are doing also what is the food that is suitable for you. And in the olden days, what they done was that any type of food if you have eaten, if you are able to get it digested, and in such a way, the pranan should be trained. The pranan should come under control. So if pranan is under control, and if Pranan wants, any type of food can be digested, right? You see, you have to look at this in days before what happened. In the olden days, you'll be surprised if I say this to you, that there is a feast in a particular temple going on, a big feast, right? People will walk 15-20 kilometers to come to the temple to have this feast. They'll walk 15-20 kilometers, right? Because once they come to the temple, what they will notice that in the Agraharam or wherever food was given, right? they will come and then they have to recite the Vedam. After recitation of the Vedam, they will get plenty of prasadam, nice prasadam will be offered from the temple. And after that, these brahmanas who are doing this, they come from such a long distance, they will be given a very small amount of money as dakshina to them, right? And then they will walk back home this 20 kilometer, which they have come, because them days there was no transport. Now we will go and park the car right in front of the deity. This is how I'm saying that how far we have fallen away from that standard, what they have set, yeah? We want the car park to be as close as possible to the temple room and closer to the prasadam hall, so that as soon as you finish, you can jump in and drive off from there. This is the way today life is, right? So, so by the time they get back home, morning they have left walking these 20 kilometers. Then they had a big feast. And they will walk back these 20 kilometers. By the time they get home, it's all digested. Everything is digested, right? So, yeah. if you see them today, now, people, they will run away seeing us, seeing our way of life, right? Why is that? Because we don't have pranam, strength inside us. Those brahmanas had the strength to walk this 20 kilometers back and forth. They were able to do that, right? So, by the time they've gone and had the meal in the temple and they walked back, they got home, by then they are hungry again. Because walking is such a long distance, right? So, what that shows is the power of pranam inside them. They acquired that strength from the pranam, right? So, if pranam is strong inside, your food will get digested. If the pranam is not strong, digestion won't happen. Blockings will happen inside. And whole digestive system will not work properly. So, and that, they had that without, now we go to gym and all that, is it not? Because it's not, we eat all sorts of things and then we go to gym to get it digested. But they had a different way of lifestyle, I'm saying. They lived in a different life, walking long, long distances. And that control on the pranam is so good that food will get digested for them. They were not getting sick in spite of all that, right? So, particularly people who are not doing much with the body, not doing at all, right? Best thing is not to eat even, right? If you eat anything, it is not going to get digested anyway. So pranam means it requires some physical effort also. Therefore, if you are living in a particular place, what they have done was, you have to look at this. And they used to do this, right? Suppose some people, this was a change what happened. People could not do anything. Physically, there was nothing much to do. In villages, I'm saying. They are not very active in their material life either. So what will they do? 100 times offering obeisance to the sun, Surya Namaskaram. They did that. Or hundreds of times offering obeisances to the deity. You would be amazed. This Namaskaram Mandapam, what is created in front of the deity, is for this purpose. For the Brahmanas to offer as many times as they want obeisances to the deity. They will come in the morning at 3 o'clock after bathing and they'll continuously offer obeisances to the deity one after the other till 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning according to their strength. Yeah? And this is how they have compensated that. Because these habits have changed, walking long distances, they've gone. People are not walking anymore like that. So they substituted that with this namaskaram process. Namaskaram process, right? So, as soon as they bathe in the morning, 100 times they made the obeisances. 100 times obeisances, straight away. We are struggling with one obeisances. They were doing 100 times obeisances. You have to look at the face of people when they get up after offering obeisances, how much everybody is struggling with it. So the thing is that you start wondering, how did the Brahmanas were offering hundreds of obeisances every day? There were people like that, right? And if they, after doing a lot of obeisances, what will they do? They will circumambulate the temple as many times as possible, chanting the holy name. So Brahmanas, how they controlled their mind, how they controlled their body, apart from their upasana. They know that tapasya means all the three things, body, mind, senses, everything should be under control. Only then your upasana will work better. Otherwise, simply just chanted everything, I didn't control anything, now you control on the body, no control on the mind, then benefit won't be there, effect won't be there, right? So they know very well that they will circumambulate the temple so many times in a day. and as long as they want, as many times as they want, simply circumambulate the temple and chanting the holy name, right? And if you do all that, the pranan will get some strength, right? So one has to learn the art of worshipping pranan, and that's what is called ayuhu, as Krishna says here. Ayuhu, ayu sattu balarogyam, sukha priti vivardhanaha, rasya snigdha sthira hridya, aharam satyaka priya, right? So, prana upasana, upasana of the pranan is vaidya karmagandam. It is in the karmagandam of the Vedam. All this prana upasana is in the vaidya karmagandam. And it is also a shastram in the yogam, right? So, you know why it is important? Because all karmam what we do is done by pranan, isn't it? If pranan does not go into our senses of action, karmendriyam, pranan is someone which is operating the hand, which is operating the legs, isn't it? Which is operating our evacuation process. All the activities that's happening in the body is controlled by pranan. So pranan has a big power inside us. And if pranan is not, it is in the field of pranan that all karmam is happening. Yeah? All karmam in the body is happening in the field of pranan. Right? And that pranan's subtle form is the mind. Therefore, in the field of pranan, if the food is getting digested properly, then it won't affect the mind. It won't affect the mind. Look at the next words. So, ayur sattva balarogyam sukha priti vivardhanaha rasya snigdha sthira hridya aharam satyaka priya. Krishna is saying that satyakam nature is that he will like food which is oily nature and the one that will get digested with him. Somehow it will get digested, right? And the ojas, or that means the strength that comes from the pranan, that will last for a very long period of time. And that kind of food will give a strength for the mind. Mind will become strong enough to enjoy that and give strength for the body and health, and it will give longevity for the life. Ayusa means lifespan, long lifespan, all these things, right? So, in order that ayuhu, he's saying here, that the energy level, pranan is the energy, right? That has to be increased. And satugunam has to happen. And inside, you have to feel this, that a samatvam, a satisfaction inside, all the time, right? And body should get the strength. So when we say strength, what does that mean? Strength does not mean that all your muscles are like, you know, the people who go to gym and they get their muscles are built up. That's not what they refer to. What they refer to is that the body develops sufficient immunity towards diseases. Pratirodha Shakti. That means if the body develops sufficient immunity from getting sick, that one, right? Similarly, able to resist influence of the senses, that power, immunity power towards sense gratification. This is all what they consider as the strength of the body, right? Then ayusa, and Krishna says, ayusa sattvam balam arogyam. He's talking about it, right? Arogyam, right? So, if you don't get sick, diseases not coming, that state is arogyam. Arogyam. Not that after a disease comes, you are treating it. But diseases don't come in the first instance, right? As much as possible, not to get sick. But if it is prarabdham, nobody can do anything about it. That's the way it is. We'll try your best not to get sick by following what Krishna is saying here. But then if still sickness is coming, you can't do anything. That's prarabdham it is. Some sinful things what we may have done in previous lives, it is matured now. So the maturity certificate they are giving to you now in the form of disease, right? So that is why, that is, you know, Ayurveda, what they call it? Asadhya Rogam, they call it. Asadhya Rogam means not treatable. It cannot be treated, right? There is two things, Asadhya Rogam and Susadhya Rogam. So this Susadhya Rogam, you can treat it and cure it. Asadhya Rogam, you can't even treat it. Ayurvedic physicians also will wash their hands off. They will know that treatment will not work anymore. They'll wash their hands off. Yeah. So, so as much as possible, not to allow the diseases to come to the body first, right? And that is why some of the prayers, if you look, what they will say is anayasena maranam, able to die without too much struggle, easy way, without too much fighting and too much of a effort, anayasena maranam, without too much struggle, able to leave the body. Vina dainena jivitam means that without too much struggle, somehow to pass through this world, life in this world, right? And there's a prayers like that. In other words, what Krishna says, ayusa sattvam balam arogyam, all that is sukham, he says. If you have those four things, ayusa sattvam balam arogyam, that will create sukham, right? Happiness inside, right? And in other words, after you have taken the prasadam, the mind should feel sukham, shanti inside. Certain type of food, if it goes inside, you will feel as though cement has gone inside. It will go inside so solid, and as though it is concrete inside working there. That kind of, how can there be any sukham there from that? So, and it will not get digested, and it will be heavy, and you go for a long walk, you come back and nothing working, then you lie down. And people do all sorts of things after eating, right? So, all that is due to pranan not cooperating enough. If pranan is helpful and cooperative, then all kinds of food will get digested, right? So, in other words, sometimes the food, people will look at the food, and when they see the type of food, something they didn't like it, the way it is delivered or it is served, whatever it is, right? It shouldn't be like that. Once you see the food, you should feel like eating that. That is why you see sometimes they give you food. Animals are skeleton-like, isn't it? All the different types of animals, they are different parts of the body. If it is served in front of you, how would you like it to eat? Snakes are offered in China, apparently. They give you snakes and all types of things, right? And people are eating that. Happily they are eating that, right? So, that is why Krishna is saying here, Preeti Vivardhanam. When you see the food, you should feel like eating that. Preeti Vivardhanam, right? But if you see another living entity in front of you in the plate, where will the Preeti Vivardhanam will come? Preeti Vivardhanam won't happen. A goat is sitting on the plate, or a chicken is sitting on the plate, or a cow's head or whatever, or rabbit or whatever it is sitting on the plate. And can you have Preeti Vivardhanam then? Where is the Preeti Vivardhanam, right? So, you know, another living entity, when it dies, how much fearful it is about death is concerned. They will run away, isn't it, when they are exposed to death. So, they also have desire to live in this world, right? And when you see that, you also feel the pain of death, right? And when you show priyam, loving affection to that living entity, that shows it back to you in the same way, right? When you become insensitive to those things, that is when you are able to do all these things. When you become insensitive to that you are able to kill these animals without any compassion for them. Not people amazed that big slaughterhouses when they run, and cows are taken in, and the way it's being killed with all this latest technology, how are they able to do that? Because they have become so insensitive to these things, right? So, and the end result of all this, animal slaughter, is violence. That comes in the form of war in the society. It is the after effect of that. Nothing can be done till we change this principle. The after effect of this animal slaughter is violence, and that means war. And there is no point in negotiating. United Nations, nothing will work. Krishna has decided. Krishna is saying, I am present in them as well. All these animals also. Is it not? And you are killing them. And for your tongue satisfaction. So this is the end result of that. Right? So, all the violence is after effect of that. Because you have become insensitive to that. So, nowadays, our love is only for human beings, each other. We all love each other. And we have resolutions for that, right? And but we should also see the love and affection of the animals as well, right? Some people see the animals' affection of the dogs and all that, but they will not see the affection of the cow, what cow has got, right? And they are not interested in the cow protection or looking after the cows, right? So, just like cow's role, it's because of this that as soon as the mother's milk dries up, who are you dependent on? On this cow's milk, isn't it? So, he is, that living entity is in the satyaga mode, and therefore its milk is more suitable. So, in human species, this thing called compassion has gone completely. We have become so dull in that aspect, right? And that is what Krishna is saying here, sukha priti vivardhanaha, sukham priti vivardhanam, right? When you see the aharam, you should feel priyam for the aharam, feel happy, and as Bhagavad Prasadam, one should be able to take it. And it should not become jadam. It should not become jadam. Jadam means that, unfortunately, what can you say about it? Food should be cooked and eaten within 3 hours. That's the rule. But now we have got that big facility called fridge inside. So everything goes in there. And once it stays in the fridge, right, in some places, in big cities, you can observe this. Husband and wife are both working, right? They got only Saturday and Sunday at home. So they decided that we will cook all the food for the whole week on Sunday and put it in the fridge. That's done very common now in everywhere. It's all big cities. If you look, this is the lifestyle now. Food is cooked and put in the fridge, right? And you can have anything any day, any time you want. Just take it out, microwave, and take it out and eat, right? So all these things are not favorable for sadhana. Krishna is not saying you shouldn't do it. What Krishna is saying is, if you are in spiritual life, and if you want to make some progress in spiritual life, you can't have that. But otherwise, if you are not interested in spiritual life, you're just interested in making money, enjoying life, doing this, doing that, you can do that. Nothing is going to happen. Only thing is, you have to come back again after leaving this body. So, that is what he's saying here. Rasyaha, you see the next line? Rasyaha, snigdaha, sthira hridyaha. That's all referring to this, right? And actually, this verse all has to be explained after studying Ayurveda very well. Only Ayurvedic physicians can explain this verse better, right? When you see that, it should give you happiness for the mind. Hridayaha priyaha, satyaga priyaha. Only people who are in the mode of goodness, they will only like that kind of food. They will reject food if it is brought from the fridge. They won't accept that. Freshly cooked, within 2 hours or so, it should be eaten. The food should be eaten. So Krishna is saying, looking at the people, the type of food what they are eating, and how they are cooking, how they are eating, from that you know which category they belong to. whether they are satvikam, rajasam or tamasam, right? So, and the type of food what they eat, from that you can grade them in which section they belong to, right? You can look at that all over the world. Somebody was saying that you went to China and in the market snakes are hanging up like this, ready for, and they are saying to the visitors who are walking through, this is very tasty, different types of snakes hanging there, and all kinds of birds, all kinds of animals, all available in their market like that. Yeah. So, can you imagine if you eat that type of food, what will happen? The snake's consciousness will come to you. Snake's bhav will be there in you. It will not go away, right? So, they will eat all these things and they will go do a lot of good at gymnastics and all that. They'll be very good at that, right? But they'll be good at those things, but there will be no sattugunam in them. That's the problem. Sattugunam won't be there. They may be good at gymnastics in you know, the kind of things in the Olympics. They compete each other and you see Chinese get all the medals. So many medals they get every year. And they think they're doing very well. They think that they're doing very well. But from Shastram point of view, Krishna is saying that they may be good at gymnastics, there will be no sattugunam in them. That means it will take a very, very, very long time for them to understand what the soul is. It's so difficult. If you are put into such places, if you are given a birth there in a situations like that, and if you develop all these eating habits like that, Krishna is saying the possibility of knowing what soul is very, very, very rare. He says impossible practically. That is the warning in that verse. In that verse, Krishna is warning that, right? So, and people who are so cruel to all other living entities, how are they able to live, right? And into this land, Buddhism went. Buddhism went into that land. And for a short period of time, only Buddhism could survive there. The reason why Buddhism disappeared in China is because of their habits. That won't match together. Buddha's teachings, because a lot of Buddha's teachings are from the Upanishads. Forget about Buddha rejected the Vedam. That's another story. But Buddhism, to a large extent, is dependent on the Vedic knowledge. Upanishads knowledge it is. Even though Buddhism went to China, it didn't survive in China because of this problem. Because of this problem, right? Because the whole, and what happened? The whole nature of Buddhism has changed. Buddhism has taken another form in China, which is nothing to do with the real Buddhism, what Lord Buddha has spoken about it, right? So, understand that aharam, how that can change a whole philosophy itself completely in another form. That is how powerful this aharam is, the food is, right? So, we'll stop it here today. We'll continue next Saturday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.